Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new Sprint of Sessions right here on Restoptopia. Happy Monday to you all. It's been two whole weeks since we've been here, but we're back, we've refreshed, and we are here to discuss all things Spencer and Trina, aka Sprina, on General Hospital. I'm Keela Cash, and by my side, as always, is my co-captain, my right hand, my ride or die, someone who is back after 2 weeks off as I was in WrestleMania mode Saturday, Sunday, and Monday of last week, but I am back. I am back in the Sprina bubble where I belong, and we are 12 weeks into Spencer bereavement, and we will see Trina for the fifth time in 8 weeks on Tuesday. You heard that correctly, because even with a week off, we didn't get Trina, which absolutely sucks. Choices, by the way, but we'll get to that momentarily. But bringing back on the sessions, as always, the one and only Jasmine. Welcome back, Jasmine.
Hey, Keela. Hey, everyone. Happy Monday. And also welcome back out of the wrestling bubble, Keela. Welcome back to you. Yeah, it's actually pretty crazy to me that we went without having an episode, and then we also had no Trina. So it's like, it's also kind of like, it's kind of fitting at the same time, because it's like, okay, well, there was no Trina on, but then it's also one of those things where it's like, they did this again. Like, that's how I feel. I'm like, they did this again. Like, I actually had a moment where I thought, so we saw every single person from Trina's family except for Trina. That's what we saw last week. We got the Ashford Robinsons except for Trina. So yeah, like you said, choices. I know we didn't see someone else either, you know, because I know people will say, well, we didn't see so-and-so either, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Trina, because we've seen so-and-so before already, longer and, you know, much more often than Trina. So people can miss me with that if that's what they want to make as the argument. But yeah, so I can't believe that we are 12 weeks into bereavement for Spencer. Like, that's even crazier to me. And we're still sitting here waiting to know, where is Spencer? Like, we know that he's in the French nunnery, high diversity, but can we see some signs that he's in that French nunnery? Like, can we get something? Anything?
Well, you know, Jasmine, that is why I'm here. And, you know, for those of you that are avid watchers of the episode titles for each episode, and you see a certain number, you know, I cannot let my dirty mind just go by aimlessly and not mention this episode number 69 of the Sprina Sessions. A very freaky number, if you know, you know. And, you know, I cannot resist what Spencer is doing 12 weeks in at the French Nunnery. Hi, diversity. How you doing? So I thought about this, and I think that it's only fair to say that on week 12, he is currently doing push-ups, okay? He's doing push-ups. He's, like, you know, getting his body back. And, you know, for dessert, he is eating ice cream of the chocolate variety as he slurps it up, thinking about his one true love, Trina Robinson, somewhere in Port Charles, bereaving and mourning his death as he is trying to find his way back to her as the French nuns lust after his heavenly body.
And we do know that Spencer is a fan of chocolate, because he had a chocolate shake at Kelly's. So
yes, he sure did.
This we know.
Trend alert. He loves himself some chocolate, okay? Likes to taste it, likes to lick it, likes to suck it. Just saying. The proof is right there in the pudding, which also happens to be chocolate, by the way. So yes, every pun intended there. So that's what Spencer's been doing the last couple of weeks as we've been off. He's trying to recover, get his body right and get recovered, and trying to find his way home to Trina somehow, some way. But in all seriousness, we hope we see our guy soon. You know, we're heading into May sweeps, and it would be a lovely surprise to have him out there somewhere in Paris, holding a dove in the bed, unconscious, and surprising all of us as he tries to make his way home. And as we came back here wondering what's going on with Spencer, we still have no idea what's happening with Nicholas's contract situation with GH. It's unchanged. Not a lick of news has come out from GH's side of things. And until that happens, there's nothing really to talk about. All I can say is that I'm hopeful and optimistic that something can happen regarding a potential return, but we keep moving because the ultimate goal is to reunite Sprina with Nicholas or someone else. And I'm all about this story continuing, and specifically Trina's to continue in Spencer's absence, which we're still advocating for every single week. And it's kind of stark that we took an entire week off and we didn't get Trina on our screens. And the reminder that Jasmine just gave me is the fact that we saw every family member of Trina's accounted for except her.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We just got a Trina mention. That's what they like to do. They like to throw in a little Trina mention here. Like, the audience is asking where Trina is. He has a little mention here. Stella got, you know, Stella here dropping off coconut cake. Mm-mm, good. Trina's favorite.
Betty Crocker could never bake a coconut cake like Aunt Stella. So now we know that Trina loves coconut cake. So that would be the official wedding cake for the wedding ceremony between Spencer and Trina. Whenever it happens, she loves coconut cake. That is a revelation. Also, we'll get to it, but miracles have happened after I talked about it the week before, about a certain somebody getting up to find the will to walk again. We'll get to him shortly as well, because every time I say something, look, every time Jasmine says something, look what happens. Mere episodes later, it happens. Manifestation is real, people. Trust and believe that. But before we get into the heart of last week and this week's GH, I want to get into a report card for Patrick Mulcahy and Elizabeth Korte. Today marks 1 month since they've taken the pen as co-head writers in General Hospital. And, you know, up until last week, I was like, okay, the show has a ways to go, but I am seeing improvement, better dialogue. I was liking some character development here and there. I love the scenes with Hat Daddy and Aunt Stella and Kevin at GH as they really got to the crux of his schizophrenia misdiagnosis a few weeks ago. I enjoyed so much Trina's moment at the graveyard talking to Spencer's tombstone. That was just everything and so much more that tells me that this regime to some extent is listening, because for weeks we've been clamoring, begging, pleading that we wanted Trina's voice to be heard via her grieving process. And all of a sudden we get this scene that really hits on everything we've been talking about. So people that say that we don't have any power here, it lies in what we saw a few weeks ago. Like, if they care enough, they'll do something about it. If they're motivated to really cater to a fan base that doesn't ask for a lot, then they do what they have to do. When there is a fire lit under their asses, and they will do it, and they delivered in a way that I was very impressed by. But once again, I don't want to hear Gina this all the time. Like, I want more than scraps. I want a full meal. And I feel like we're not getting that fully with Trina's story. And that goes across the board for Black Hospital as well. Mm-hmm. I go to TJ and he was on for the third time in 2 months. That's another stark reminder of the lack of airtime for TJ, for Portia, for Curtis, for Aunt Stella, for Hat Daddy Marshall. These characters that were so integral to the February sweeps last year, not doing very much in the last couple of months. That must change as well. But then I look at the overall body of the show, and in the last week or so, the last four episodes specifically, I don't know what has happened. It felt like we are on a one-way train and it has jumped the track and mm-hmm. it's just jumping into the river somewhere, and we are flailing, trying to stay above water. I have no idea what is going on, but this feels like a creative crisis is afoot. And I'm wondering to myself, what the hell is going on, especially with the presentation of Nina's character
yes.
and the oversaturation of Carly being on screen every fucking mm-hmm. day last week, and most likely will be on screen every fucking day this week. And every new guy that comes on this show, she must be the one to usher them in and say, welcome to Bobby's. And hey, can I take your order? Oh, you're handsome and you're good looking, and there's angst and there's an attraction there. And oh, now we're trying to Kim test. Like, I see all of this. I see what's going on. And I'm like, Tanisha Harper's right there as Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And we see her and we see Jagger and Jordan, you know, having the eyes, and you don't even try to explore that. But Carly gets first dibs on every new guy that revolves around that door. And I wonder why, but I'm not going to get into that because the agenda, unfortunately, is agending. But Jasmine, your take on what we've seen recently on GH and your grade before I offer mine.
Oh, you're going to put me on the spot and make me do it first. Okay, yes. First I need to find out, are we grading them separately, or is this a group project grade?
This, you know, listen, I'm going back in my college bag. Group project. You Go must on. Be graded as a group.
Oh, okay. Good Lord. Okay. I'm gonna do this. This is how I'm gonna do. If we go in college grade, and I'm gonna do it this way. I'm gonna say we started the semester off on the semester was a little bit rocky. Like, you know, they started doing some good things. Like, there were some good things that were happening. Like, you know, like the stuff that we saw with Marshall and Kevin, with, you know, them talking about his diagnosis for his misdiagnosis for schizophrenia. That was some good stuff, you know. But, you know, Charlotte Gibson had her hand in that. So and then we had these dry moments where we didn't see Trina for 3 weeks. We still haven't seen, you know, Trina and her mom and, you know, doing things. Everything has been very, very Carly coded. Like, everything's heavy on the Carly, like heavy handed with everything. And like you said, I feel like the GH has this obsession with making every man pass the toll through her. It's literally like a toll bridge. Like, you must pay Carly first before you go see anybody else. Like, that's how it feels like. Pay the Carly toll. Like, you go into Kelly's and you meet her and you have to bow down to her, bend the knee. Like, she is the gateway to get through everything else. Like, that's how it feels. Cause like you said, it's like we watched Jordan and Jagger have these moments where I was like, oh, there could be something happening. But then it's like, oh, back to Carly. This is who Carly's gonna be, the one who gets to talk to him, and, you know, Brennan and all these other men that are on this show are the ones who get to talk to her. But then, like I said, you know, we see, you know, there's no Trina, and then when she does come on, she's barely getting any screen time. She has that minimal moment with Ava, like, her grief is minimized. And then we come back and we have these wonderful scenes with her and Stella and her moment at Spencer's gravesite. So then we have all the stuff we saw last week that had me scratching my head and really saying, did you guys just, like, throw your school project together at the last minute? Like, that's how it feels. It feels like you guys threw your project together at the last minute. Like, somebody did their work and the other person didn't. It was like, who didn't do all their work? Who didn't finish all the group work? So if I have to give them a grade and it's going to be them together, I'm going to say right now, oh gosh, right now I'm teetering on a C. That's where I'm at right now, because like I said, they started off good. Like, I feel like, because you know how with college, like, they start you off at an A, and then it's like, you started off at an A today. You got to keep that A. Do the work to keep that A. And I feel like they're not doing the work to keep it. So right now, they're at a C for me.
You are kind. You are a very generous grader. I wish you were my teacher when I was in college. Because, you know, in college, it's a little easier because you get that curve, right? And then, like, if you take a test and if you have the highest score, everybody gets a piece of the pie. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, you got, like, that 98. Okay, you get that +5, everybody. Mm-hmm. If you got that C, it's a borderline B. So, you know, I love that. So you are an excellent grader. I am harsh. I am just strict with my grades. And I will be for real. Up until last week, I was going towards C+. I was right there, like, okay, this is respectable C+ work. I see things I like. I like Aunt Stella and Tracy's friendship. Mm-hmm. That's positive. I appreciate the fact that we had that moment with Trina at Spencer's gravesite. That was beautifully written. I want more. And I think that is going to be a core issue throughout this episode of wanting more. And then we have the dumb shit, Heather's rusty ass hip. Ugh. That's a major drawback for me, which we'll get to shortly as well.
Forgot about that. Damn it.
Yes, we'll get to that rusty ass hip soon. And then we pivot back to some more good stuff with Valentine being the guy behind Pikeman. And I like how that was told. We saw Ava's motivations to a point, and then they took a big backtrack last week on that. And then I saw the chemistry legit between Nina and Drew. I was on the hate sex train. I was into enemies to lovers. I was into it. And then this week happened. And I was like, okay. I've been watching soaps for 30 years, and I got a story to tell later, too, about my depth of love for a particular ship that y'all know about, that I've talked about before. But to see how they executed this particular angle was appalling to me. Mm-hmm. And it dates back to what was written a few months ago, and it was never addressed. There were no apologies about what was said. There was no meeting of the minds. There was no compromise. We just got to something that was absolutely, ugh. Mm-hmm. We'll get to it. And then the aftermath of it was even worse. So because of all of that and the Carly heaviness of it all and Jason's return being flatter than a pancake outside of him visiting Elizabeth and Jake, which I loved because Jake says you ain't shit. And he should say that because where's this child support, bitch? Where's my payments? Okay. Where's my tuition for college? Because you want to be a deadbeat ass. You know, Danny, he's like, oh, that's my dad, Danny boy. Oh, Danny boy. Like, he wants to be, you know, there for his dad. But Sam says, hell no to that. I understand, sis. I truly do. We'll get to his raggedy bitch ass later being a terrible father of the year. But when you couple all of that together, D.
I almost did that. I almost gave them a D.
Not good. Not good. And, you know, I spoke very highly of Patrick when he was initially announced to join the writing team for GH as a co-head writer. But I'm going to be real. I'm not impressed right now. Mm-mm. And the reality is, when we made the joke about Chris and Dan, Dan and Chris, they were interchangeable, meaning that the smoke could go either way. Like, whoever did whatever, it's on you. This, what we're seeing now with the credits that open every episode, those names alternate. It could be Elizabeth one day, Patrick the next. If they're alternating, if it happens to be a trash-ass episode and your name is attached at the top, then you got to take the smoke. And I can't say whether it's 100% Patrick, but we do have breakdown writers still there. We do have a script writer there as well that puts this together. So I'm going to say it's a collective effort, that it's a fail across the board for every episode that doesn't hit, but you don't get exempt. It's like, yes, you've done amazing things throughout your illustrious career, but ultimately it comes down to what have you done for me lately? And right now it's been not very much. And I'm trying to give this regime a chance. It's been a month and we've seen some good things. But the fact is, I have never seen a sharp turn in the wrong direction the way we've seen thus far in the last four episodes or so. And I'm afraid it's going to continue into this week, which is very concerning to me, because we thought that with a change in writing, that we would get something better. But if you still have biases in place and agendas that won't let up, and you have possible outside interference, it doesn't matter who you put there. If the executive producer, Frank Valentini, if there is network interference as well, Nathan Varney, if you have your hands in anything creatively, this show will never grow. It will never reach its greatest potential to be, I don't know, iconic again. That no matter how many primetime specials you pull out your asses, it's not going to give you the viewership you need on the daily. And you've done this with Steve Burton's return. The numbers are very flat. And yes, I'm going to give Tabiana the credit, because the week before last, when she was doing that scene at the graveyard as Trina, that was the day their numbers went up for the first time in 2 weeks. That is a fact. So you have to be recognizing the draw of your show. And she is one of those key draws here, that up until that point, your numbers were falling. You were legit 18,000 viewers away from where you were before Steve Burton came back, and you got a bounce back because primarily of that Monday's episode when she got 12 minutes, when she was 33% of the episode. So that counts for something. So you realize that somebody can move numbers for you, but you're inconsistent with it. And we see that inconsistency across the board on this show. There is so much in one direction for characters that just don't do it. They don't speak to the audience at large. That's a fact. And if you keep leaning in that direction, this show will continue to fail. And I can only blame the writers to a certain point, because if they are dealing with bullshit from the outside, I'm looking at that person as well, because the show can never grow if you still have people sticking their nose where it doesn't belong. Mm-hmm. That is going to be an issue moving forward. I've been a wrestling fan for a very long time. I know about fancy titles. You are the executive director of Monday Night Raw. You are the executive director of Friday Night SmackDown. You're the chief content officer of this. You're the chief content officer of that. It doesn't mean shit if the main person that runs the creative process has the final say. It doesn't matter how great you are. How much autonomy do you really have? And I'm wondering with that when it comes to GH. I don't trust certain people behind the scenes. Mm-mm. And there is a writer, Elizabeth, I'm going to say her name. I think she's incredibly biased in her writing. I see it all the time. Look at the episodes this week. Every day, Nina got shitted on by numerous characters. And Carly was elevated as if she's like a lioness, as if she's a saint. We'll get to all of that later, but the writing doesn't lie. The biases are right there in your face. It's undeniable. Is it an internal decision in the writer's room, or is it something from the outside? If that's the case, unfortunately, if the numbers come out and they're not bouncing back up pre-Steve and post his return, you got a problem here. You just can't insert new writers and say it's going to be the same old shit. No, you actually have to evolve and do something better and different. And if they can't do that, if you can't execute that vision, it might be time to, I don't know, completely clean the house. And that includes Frank. Hate to say it, but it's true.
And what's crazy to me about that is that, like you said, it's like it's like that whole thing of like new, like, you know, when you go under new management and you think like you're, it's like we can go one of two ways. Like it could be really bad or it could be really good. Da, 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 da. And it's like, I know some people were thrilled when they heard that Patrick was coming on, and you know, I'm not like, I wasn't super, super familiar with his writing. Like, cause I didn't pay attention to who was doing the writing of, you know, anything until recently. Like last year was when I started really honing in and paying attention to who was writing what on what days, because I was noticing the shift in how a lot of the characters I love were being, you know, Trina and Spencer were being written out of character. So that made me really tune in to say like, who's got the pen this day? Because this is weird. Like this, none of this is cohesive. Like I'm not understanding this. So like everybody kept saying like, well, Patrick is going to come in and he's going to do this, this, and this. Cause he did so well with, you know, this group and, you know, with this show and da, 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 da. And like, he's done this episode and that episode and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But for me, it's just one of those things where I'm just kind of like, okay, like I've sat back and I've watched to, you know, see what the show is going to look like under him and Elizabeth. But the writing, it's still questionable. And also, the thing is, we have to really look too at, you know, like you said, the people that are above the writers, Frank and Nathan Varney, because they're at fault too. Because this is the thing, like Frank Valentini got on a stage and told people that they were telling this important love story with, you know, with Carly and Drew during the daytime Emmys, you know, post, you know, that little post interview. That's what he said. Like he, instead of him focusing on highlighting Spencer and Trina, which to all of us that were watching at the time knew that Spencer and Trina were actually the important love story that was being told, because hi, mixed race couple. And, you know, a prince and you know, and Trina Robinson, like, come on, like, this is crazy. Like, this was a crazy thing to me. So I just feel like those two men at the top are to blame for the state of GH right now, because you can change the writing team all you want to, but the problem is still at the top. And then if you promote one of the people, Elizabeth Corte, I'm going to call her out too. If you're promoting another person that has like bias in the writing room, which we can see, because the thing is like, people want to say all the time that, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Oh, you're crazy. Like, you guys are just saying all of this because you want to see Trina and da 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 da. She's not being shown. So this is why you're saying all of this. Okay, first and foremost, yes, I do want to see Trina because she's my favorite character. She's why I turn on my television at 2:00. She's why I'm watching. And I admit that. So if I'm saying that I want to see her, that's me. Like, that's me saying a character I want to see. We all turn on the TV. We all turn GH on to see the characters we want to see. But that needs to be balanced. And that's not what I'm seeing. With Elizabeth Cortez Penn, all we've seen is Carly, 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 Carly every single day on my TV screen. When I turn on the promo, when I look at the promo clip on Monday to see who's to see what the show is going to be focused on, it's very Carly heavy, very Sunny heavy. And of course, I knew it was going to be Jason heavy because Steve Burton is back. So I expected it. But when it's constantly all of this over and over and over again, this oversaturation of Carly on my TV screen. And then I'm watching another character, Nina, get bashed and, as you said, shit on the entire week. It's like, what are you saying to your audience? Like, you guys are telling us Elizabeth Cordae. I don't know Patrick, because I know Patrick was a Carly fan. I don't know how he feels about this iteration of Carly's character, but I know he was a Carly fan too. So it's like, what are you saying to the viewers when you have every person on screen bashing her from her own daughter, Willow, which I cannot stand. I cannot stand the character of Willow. She is so annoying now. Like, she is literally the worst. Every time I watch her and Nina in scenes, I'm just like, shut up. Like, she is just, ugh. Like, the relationship she has with Nina is just awful. Like, it's awful. I like just seeing this, who is supposed to be your mother, who's been trying to do things for you since, you know, she found out that you were her daughter, and you're not even trying because you think that Carly is so great. Like, what are you telling me? And then even her own friends are talking trash about her, and like Nina's own friends are talking trash about her when she's not even in the room. So it's just like, what are you saying? Like, what are you saying to the audience? Like, you're telling the audience you should like Carly and hate Nina. Like, that's what I feel like you're telling me. I feel like you're telling me every day at 2 o'clock that this is the character you shouldn't like, but this is the character you should like. I feel like that's what I'm being told all the time. And like the ratings, when you talked about the ratings having a nice little jump when Trina was on and she had those scenes as, you know, those scenes at Spencer's grave, I'm literally like, it reminds me of that line from Bring It On when Torrance says, Missy's the poo, so take a whiff. Like, that's how I feel. I'm like, that's how I feel about Trina. I'm like, I don't know what it's going to take for these people, Nathan, Frank, at the Elizabeth Cortez, all, you know, Patrick, all these people involved at the top to realize that Trina Robinson, Tabiana Ali, is a draw for a lot of people when they're watching this show. And I feel like they don't want to accept that. And I just feel like they've made, I feel like, I'm thinking about it from a business standpoint, and I'm like, you guys are making all the worst moves for your business right now. Like, that's how I feel. Like, I'm like, you're resting all of your business decisions on the Carly Jason Sunny storyline. Like, I feel like that's what you're doing. Like, you're putting all of your money, you're putting all of your money on this. Like, it's like if you're gambling and you're like, I'm gonna put all my bets on Carly Jason Sunny. That's where everything's going. Everything else can take a back burner. And I'm sorry to say it, because, like, you know, obviously, like, I know that they're trying to, because, you know, they don't have, there's no nurse's ball this year. Like, there was no nurse's ball this April because everything was being restructured with the whole, you know, with the shift of the writing team and, you know, them letting people go, which was a big mistake. And so, like, they didn't have that. So April, what is the month of April? Like, the month of April right now, this month is just awful. Like, when I've been watching it, and I'm so tired of people saying, oh my gosh, all you guys do is complain, complain, complain. If the show is so bad, why are you watching it? Why do you keep turning it on? Like, if I don't like something and I'm not enjoying something, I'm not gonna watch it. But I'm just basically like, you can't dictate to me what I'm gonna do when I turn my TV on at 2 o'clock. That is my business, to turn my TV on at 2 o'clock and watch the show, because I want to watch the show and actually be able to have an opinion on things that I'm seeing. Because, you know, it's easy for people to call you out and say, like, well, you don't even watch the show, so you don't have a voice. Like, it doesn't matter what you say. Like, that's basically what people's mindset is. Like, the mindset becomes, you're not even watching. Like, you don't watch. Like, all, you only watch when Trina's on, so how can you even say what's happening? And that's why I tune in and I watch the show, because I want to be able to say, well, I'm seeing this happening here and I'm seeing that happening here, so that people don't say I'm just playing favorites, or you just want to watch because you want to see your favorite all the time. But no, I want to see all of the characters. And it's like, they feel like, I feel like, I get it. Like, I get there's a time when, like, General Hospital has to have, like, these quote unquote front burner stories where people are, you know, where we see more people, you know, more than others or whatnot. But I'm sorry, General Hospital, Frank, Nathan, all of y'all hired all of these people to be on your show. So show them all. Don't be lazy and don't shift your focus to just one set of people, because this is the thing. Somebody said it beautifully, and I think I said it when we were on the when we had the show a couple weeks ago, that when was the last time when was the last time we went 3 weeks without seeing Carly or Sunny on our screens? And that's never been the case. Like, that has not been the case. So it's like, if we're asking to see the other characters that are on this show, we should be allowed to see them. We should be able to voice our opinions and say, well, how come I'm not seeing this character? Like, or how come if I'm seeing TJ, he's getting screen time where he's talking about the same thing over and over again. All he's doing is talking about the baby. But you know who else is getting different storylines? Carly's always getting a different storyline. She's getting thrown into storylines that don't even concern her. Like, I can think of times where she's been put into moments that she doesn't even need to be in. Like, they just want to throw her in there just to say she's in there. And it's like, it's not like this is a Carly hate fest type of thing for me. It's just making me exhausted to see her on my screen every day. Cause I don't necessarily have a problem with the character of Carly. It's just, stop putting her on all the time, like every single day. Like, you can't even miss the character of Carly because she's on all the time. And I said, if any of her own fans are being honest, I would think that they would say that they feel like she's on all the time too, because she is. Like, she's on constantly. And like I said, sometimes they throw her into storylines that she doesn't even need to be on. So I'm just like, can we see the other characters doing other things? Because like I said, there are other characters on this show who are just as important. But like I said, there is no nurse's ball to save things this month. Like, that clearly was not happening. So May sweeps, you got coming up. And if you're riding and resting everything for May sweeps on Brooklyn and Chase's wedding, sorry to the Chaelyn fans, because I know that there's people who love them. Like, I like them. I don't love them, but I don't think that the Brooklyn and Chase wedding is going to be the thing that saves this show. So if they do think that, if GH thinks that that wedding is going to boost the ratings, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I don't know what else GH has under their sleeve as far as like what other storylines they're working with. But right now, like, everything I've been seeing has been very, very questionable. And a lot of people that we all know that have been, you know, day ones and watching the show continuously are tapping out because they're just over it. Like, a lot of people, last week's episodes was kind of like this is my last straw and I'm tapping out and I can't do this anymore.
And I don't blame them at all, because like last week, I think I hit a wall too, but we cover the show because we love the character of Trina. But for the last month or so, we had to cover other storylines on GH to kind of fill time. And I have no problem doing that. But if it's not good, I'm not going to waste my breath on it. At some point, it does get tedious. It does get a bit too much. And the key factor in all of this is oversaturation of one character. And at the top of this episode, I said on Tuesday, we will see Trina's character for the fifth time in 8 weeks. And in the last 9 days of GH time here this week and last week, you will see Carly at least 8 times. Maybe 9. If she's not in the spoiler, she might pop up out of nowhere. So she could go 9 for 9, not missing a single episode. But we get Trina 5 times in 8 weeks. That is a serious imbalance. Period. I don't care what you say or what you do. It's inexcusable. They're both on contract. Mm-hmm. And it says to me that you prefer one character over the other, but which character generates more buzz and positive engagement on social media? The answer is Trina's character. Mm-hmm. That is the answer to your question. Who moves numbers? We have seen it repeatedly. It's Trina's character. It's Tabiana Ali. And I think it's high time that the people that are in charge of the show understand that. I go to a terminology in wrestling called the push. And it's the push of, if somebody's popular and they are beloved by the people, and the people want this particular wrestler or superstar to be spotlighted, then we let our voices be heard via the reaction. And you get that in the live crowds and in ticket sales and in television ratings. If they're the draw and the pull, that's who you push. So if Trina's character and Tabiana is the draw, you push that person and you push that character to the forefront. Do I want oversaturation? No. Mm-hmm. I want balance. Mm-hmm. Balance. That's all we're asking for, because right now it's incredibly imbalanced. I'm not asking for Trina to be everywhere, but I want equal airtime for her character, because she's a proven draw. She's a proven ratings mover. And for them to willfully ignore that is a problem for me, but it's convenient at the same time, because they hear the rancor on social media. They hear the pushback from us. And when they hear that, they say, okay, so we haven't had Trina on screen in 3 weeks. I know what we can do. Let's give SOD an episodic pick. Mm-hmm. And that'll calm them down. And then we'll drop a preview clip and Trina's in the scene. Mm-hmm. And that'll hook them in, right? And then, okay, so we hear them about her not having her point of view about her grief. Okay, so let's do something about that. Let's give her 12 minutes and then we'll do another preview clip for Monday's GH. We'll hook them and they'll watch. So you're telling me and you're telling us that you're very reactionary to what we're saying. Mm-hmm. So you're listening to us. You're hearing us, and you're reading what we have to say, because apparently whoever runs your social media, they are aware of what's going on and they're very strategic about what they release week to week and what show clip of the day they choose to select, because they hear us. But here's the thing. We should not have to light a fire under your ass every other month to get your attention. You should know these things. You should know what to do. We shouldn't pressure you to do what's automatic. The same thing happened last summer. You can do whatever you want to do when you want to do it. You can stop bullshit on a dime. Period. The turnaround with the scripts these days are hella fast. You can do whatever you like at the whim of the fans that call you out on your BS. So you can't tell me what you can't do. You're just selective on when you do it and how you want to do it. Mm-hmm. But at some point, you have to stop putting band-aids on what's not healing and actually do wholesale evaluation on what's wrong with your show. Stop giving piecemeal treatment for what you should be fixing on a whole. And until you do that, you're never going to be a complete show. So all we're asking you to do is give balanced airtime to Trina, to Tabiana, to Brooke, to Donnell, mm-hmm. to Vernay, to Robert, to Taj, to Tanisha, to Christina. I'm putting Christina Wagner in there too. 2 episodes in 2 months. Crazy to me. She's a vet. 35 mm-hmm. years in the game. She deserves better too, because that is egregious. She comes in Bobby's one day and she's not heard from again.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm putting her name on that too. She's a legacy character. So yeah, you got to do right by the people that have been there for a long time and by your Black cast, who by all accounts are a draw for your show. We're not asking for, oh my God, you have to give them every episode. No, I'm asking for equality, because we see one character doesn't miss an episode. They're on 5 days a week, 4 days a week. They don't miss a day. But then we have weeks at a time when we don't see certain characters, and it bleeds into months at a time. That is a problem. That's what we're talking about. And I'm sick and tired of having to ask for what you should already know what to do. So when you know what you need to do, you know what you need to do? You need to fucking do it. Mm-hmm. All the time, not some of the time when your viewership sinks and you have to say, oh my God. Let's write this up. Let's fix this. Yes, fix it, but do better. Be consistent. That's the thing we're asking for.
Yep, I agree. Because, and just like thinking about like the Black characters, like all these one-offs that they keep getting, like, you know, that's not what we're asking for. Because like I said before, they're choosing actively not to write for them with strong, good storylines. Because the storylines that I'm watching for the Black characters right now are lazy. Like they feel very lazy. And I feel like it's more of like taking away from their own stories, their own build up of their own things, which I know, which I'll get into more when we talk about the episodes this week. But yeah, like these one-offs with the black characters, and then you watch like, and then you're watching the white characters actually having storylines that are continuing on a basis that flows. Like, you know, granted, some of the stuff is wonky, but they're still getting storylines that seem like they're leading somewhere. Whereas when our people come on the show, it just feels like they just put them on as a one-off, like, oh, you're just gonna sit here on this bench and talk for a couple minutes and then you're done. So
girl, I need oxygen after this.
Mm-hmm.
I am tired, but you know what, I said what I said, I meant what I said, and I just hope that heading into May, this is really a test, because this is May sweeps. February was a complete fail across the board. Like, there's no excuse. Transition time, I get it. May sweeps, this is the Patrick Elizabeth vision. I hope it's good. I hope it's something that we can latch on to. Last week is not giving me a lot of confidence. I'm looking at the spoilers for this week. I'm not encouraged either. So if May's not cooking something in the kitchen, we're going to have the same conversation until you get it right. Because the answer is in your faces. And to be willfully ignorant towards it, you know what? All I got to say is the Gates 2025.
Mm-hmm.
Because the talk got canceled. So that tells me the Gates is a go at 2.
Yep.
PM Eastern, 2 Pacific, 2 Mountain, wherever you live in America, it's coming to a TV near you on CBS. The eyeball said, bitch, we coming. We coming. So GH, get your shit together, because if not, you're going to be a fourth place bitch. That's where you're going to be at.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple. And if NBC wants to get back in the game, you're going to be a fifth place bitch. Potentially. So good luck to you. So that's where we're at. Congrats to the Gates. Looks like you're going to be coming through imminently, because the talk got canceled. Ironic how they got canceled after replacing As the World Turns and Guiding Light. Now their light's going out. Oh, well. Their world is not turning so much on their end. My condolences to the talk. But with that being said, now it's time to talk about last week's GH, while we were off. And Jasmine talked about this, talked about Curtis's big toe for weeks. Wiggle your big toe, Curtis. Wiggle your big toe. Well, he's wiggling all 10 toes. His ankles are moving. Knees are bending. His core is working. And he stood up. And he began to walk in his house out of nowhere. Aunt Stella caught him mid-walk. And she couldn't believe that he was hiding his progress from his family. And as she was preparing that coconut cake for Trina, she told Curtis, listen, you know what secrets do to this family. Don't hide good news. Share it with Portia. Let her know how you're doing, your progression with your ability to walk again. Let her see for herself how far you have come. So after Aunt Stella leaves and Portia comes home from work, when she goes in the kitchen to get a little something, Curtis surprises her by standing up. And I will say this is really lovely, that he walked towards her step by step. He reached out for her and they embraced, they kissed, and all of his toes are wiggling. He's moving, Jasmine. He's a marvel. After all of this time, he's walking. I thought that was a very beautiful moment. I kind of called it a week beforehand that, listen, he's been in rehab working and, you know, doing bicep curls and whatnot. It's his time to see the progression from this surgery. I'm glad they didn't do the fast, quick stuff in a week or so. It took a couple of months, but nonetheless, Curtis is walking again. But, you know, despite that, Hat Daddy didn't get to see this in real time. Trina didn't get to see it when it happened. They got it after the fact. I don't think Hat Daddy's seen Curtis walk yet. So those beats were missing. But I'm still happy for that cute moment between Portia and Curtis a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. We all knew that Curtis walking was imminent based on the things that they were having him do, like all the stuff that was happening over the course of the last couple of weeks. But, you know, when Stella saw him, I was like, ooh, busted. When she was like, how long have you been doing this? Like, how long have you been walking? walking. And I agree with her too when she told him that he needed to share some good news, because I mean, why would you keep that a secret? Like, and his reasoning for keeping it a secret was because he didn't want his family to witness him struggle. So I liked when Stella broke it down for him, and she was basically like, but you know, we've seen you go through the hard times with you not being able to walk, so why would you think that we wouldn't want to witness you doing good? Which makes a lot of sense, because it's like, you want to see him and be able to celebrate in that joy of him taking his first steps and, as you say, wiggling his big toe. Like, you want to see all those things, because the thing is, they know he's been doing therapy. It's not a secret. So it's like, why would you want to hide this? Like, what were you waiting for, Curtis? Like, that's how I feel. Like, what exactly were you waiting for to show your family that you can walk? And, you know, like, you know, him not wanting to use the cane. I'm like, you need to use the cane, sir. Like, you just started walking. But when you know, I felt the same way about him not having his entire family around to witness that. Because, you know, like you said, I'm like, Marshall doesn't know this. But unless Portia called him up and said, you know, Curtis is walking again, and having Trina find out off screen, too, that he can walk. Like, I had a problem with that. Like, I really did, because I'm just like, Trina has been one of his biggest champions. Like, she's been one of his biggest cheerleaders the entire time. So for his own daughter to not get to witness that moment, like, that was actually really frustrating to me. Like, it was. I'm like, so we're not going to let Trina see this moment of joy for her dad, but she's been supporting him from day one. And they literally had that conversation, you know, the day that he was comforting her at the house, when she was like talking about, we're gonna throw you this party, and you know, when she was all upbeat about him, you know, obviously she was like, you know, doing her little fake happy thing, but still, it would have made her happy to see him walking. So the choice to have her find that out off screen, like, I'm just like, okay. Even like, she's even finding stuff out about her own dad walking off screen too. Like, everything's happening around Trina, even her own father walking. Like, she can't find that out in person. Like, I don't understand. Like, I don't understand why GH would take away something like that. That's what I'm saying. Like, people are doing this whole thing of, you know, they say Patrick is very like family oriented and he cares about the family dynamic, but the entire Ashford family doesn't get to witness him standing and walking. Just Stella and Portia get to see it. Like, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know. I really don't know. I really don't know what, you know, what is the point of doing that. I mean, the scene was good. Like, you know, it was a good scene. Like, I admit that, because I always like watching the Stella and Curtis scenes, but I would have liked it too if they had actually involved the entire family and being able to see him. Like, that would have been a good time for both Portia and Trina to walk in and see it. Like, that would have been a nice moment. But, you know, Portia and Trina haven't even had scenes together, but that's another conversation. So, yeah.
Speaking of that, we were deprived of a Hallmark Mahogany moment when Curtis got up to walk and his family could have seen it. That would have been nice to have the entire Ashford Robinsons under one roof to see this, but they chose to have two people see it instead. Definite choices. And speaking of Portia and Trina, another fun stat, over 2 months since Portia and Trina have shared scenes together. This is a trend that started back dating to last year. And it's repeating itself again, and I do not understand why. I've talked about it a few weeks ago, about maybe they realized that, oh shit, we at Portia LaGrue are crazy capping for Esme, but you know what? You made that bed, you gotta lie in it, roll in it, and clean it up. If you shit in the bed, you gotta own it and fix it and have it acknowledged and have Trina go off on her mom, because that's the only way we're gonna move forward. Ignoring it outright and having them not share scenes together is the weirdest thing that defies all logic. 2 months of one of the best mother-daughter relationships completely ignored. And I do not understand why. Stop being afraid to go there and fix the shit you started. Old regime or not, do what you gotta do to fix it. Stop pussyfooting around. I'm tired of it. 2 months of this shit is inexcusable to me. Period.
I agree 100%. Like, every time I see, I was like, I hate this. I hate this so much. I hate having to go back to Carly as the I can't think of the word right now. My brain is not bringing the word out, but I hate using Carly, the litmus. I hate using Carly as a litmus to everything else that I'm looking at, because it's like, I just got done watching Carly and her entire family, like all in the kitchen, all happy family, like cooking lasagna and whatnot. But then I'm sitting there and I'm watching this and I think to myself, well, what about Portia and Trina? Like, it's like this, like seeing this kind of stuff is like, what do the people at GH think that the Black fans are going to think when we watch, you know, we watch the white mother with her kids and they're all like having this family oriented moment of warmth. And she's like, like with everybody, like just like my family's here, my best friend's back, like all like living it up. But then on the other end, I'm watching Trina and she doesn't even get to be with her own mother. Like she has not talked to her mother since after Spencer's memorial service. Like that to me is shameful. That's awful. And I'm not even gonna buy this whole like, oh well, you know, Portia's the co-chief of staff, so she's so busy now, maybe she doesn't have time to be home. She had plenty of time to be home so she could see Curtis walking, so I don't want to hear that. But I'm like I need better for that. And just like, it's like if you think about it too, like even like with the Black characters, like they don't even have siblings, they don't have brothers and sisters. Trina's an only child, TJ's an only child. All the Black families, these kids, they have, there's only one child. Like there are no brothers and sisters when you think about it, because Joss has Michael, but what does everybody else have? They don't, Trina's an only child, and so is TJ. They don't have siblings. There's nobody for them to go hanging out with and chatting with or having fun times with. They don't have siblings. And when was the last time TJ and Trina had a conversation? They're family and they haven't even hung out with each other. I can't even recall the last time they talked to each other, but when they did talk to each other, they had a great conversation. So it's like you said, Keela, like they just need to, I do not know. I keep saying this. I don't know how Patrick or even Elizabeth Corte, but she probably doesn't even give a damn, like how they plan to remedy what was done, like with Portia and Trina's relationship being broken over the summer by her being Team Esme. Because like, you know, like I said before, like we all felt some type of way about that because it was disgusting. And I would really love to know what Brooke Kerr's take on it was. Like just reading those scripts and knowing that she has to befriend Esme when she had that conversation with Stella about, you know, about the things that Esme was doing to Trina. But she has to spend months on ends, you know, being friends with her, and actually has Esme tell her to her face, I see you as a friend. Like, ew. But I'm just like, it actually hurt for me to watch the Carly scene with her in the kitchen, because I couldn't help but think, why isn't this happening with Portia and Trina? Like, why are they not sitting down and talking to each other? Why are they not doing something, like, you know, because I was looking at the, you know, like the old Portia scenes between Trina, and I was watching them at Kelly's when they were having milkshakes together. I'm like, why are we not watching them sit down and have like lunch? Like, why are they not have, like, but, you know, it's like when Trina was with Spencer, guess what? We saw Portia all the damn time. Portia was always with Trina when she was with Spencer, because she was coming in between the two of them. But the second that Spencer is dead, presumed dead, we all of a sudden just, there's no mother-daughter relationship anymore. So it's like, make it make sense for me. Like, I'm at the point now where I'm like, if Trina has to find out anything that her mom was doing for you guys to fix this relationship, just do it already. Because like I said before, I keep going back to when Trina's best friend threw Morgan's death in Carly's face, and the two of them were just fine after that. Like, they, mothers and daughters fight. It happens. Mothers and daughters have moments where they don't get along, but then they find their way back to each other. And honestly, right now, when I'm watching this stuff and I'm watching this separation between Portia and Trina, I feel like this is a separation that they would have had after Trina found out that her mom lied to her for 20 years. Because we kept on saying, oh, she forgave her mom too fast after that. But the only difference is with this time around is that Trina and her mom, in Trina's mind, are getting along. Like, Trina doesn't think that there's anything wrong with her mom right now. She doesn't know any of the stuff she was doing behind the scenes when it comes to Spencer or Esme. So Trina's just floating along thinking, my mom is the greatest. Like, she was telling Spencer in New York how much she loves her mom. So, I mean, there is no problem as far as Trina is concerned. So why are you guys neglecting to have this relationship be showcased on screen? And, like, you know, Curtis is, you know, I know Curtis is her dad, but it's like, how are we expected to believe this bond between Trina and Curtis a man that she didn't have as her biological father for 20 years, and you just completely erase the relationship she has with her mother. Like, I don't like that. It just doesn't sit right with me. And I'm just like, I'm tired of it, because I need to see some Portia and Trina scenes, because, like, I don't get this. Like, you know, daughters need their mothers, and Black daughters are going to be with their Black mother. So I'm just like, where are we and what are we doing with this? Like, how is this going to get fixed?
It's bizarre, and I hope it gets fixed soon, because the excuses to me, they don't work anymore, and it's tiring. It's been 2 months. 2 months, and they haven't shared a single scene together. It is stark, and it doesn't make any sense. But let's move forward with the Thursday before last, GH. So Curtis is walking into Kelly's using a cane, and Trina helps him, and Josh is working that day, leads a round of applause. Mm-hmm. So fucking corny and cheesy. I personally got secondhand embarrassment. Mm-hmm. I did. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is so corny. Like, did everybody know that Curtis got shot? Like, oh my God, he's walking. Let's clap. Oh my gosh, he's a walking Marvel. Does someone have a collection plate so we can just add to the charity case? That's basically what they were doing. Mm-hmm. I was just appalled by that. So eventually they sat down, and Felicia paid her respects as well, and she walked away. Only time we saw Felicia. Appalling, by the mm-hmm. way. Appalling. So eventually we have Josh sit down. She's off duty. And she is telling Trina, oh, well, you know, the college is asking me about whether or not you're coming back to be my roommate. And, you know, I got to start making those decisions for the fall. And Trina's undecided on that. And Mr. Bourne is still holding a spot for her in Paris as well. So she doesn't know exactly what she's going to do just yet, but she's keeping her options open. And as we're having this conversation, Dex walks in and Joss gives him the face, and Trina and Curtis look on. And she doesn't want to serve Dex, but Curtis says, how would your grandmother feel, Joss? This place is named after her, Bobby's. And you have to do your customer service. You have to do your duty. You have to offer hospitality, whether you're dating that person or not. And so Joss stands up and she says, I guess I got to be the grown up here, the bigger person, and do my job. So she did her job and she walked over, and she was stunned that Dex is going to be a proud member of the PCPD, because we all know he can't shoot for shit, but he's going to try to be one of PCPD's finest nonetheless. So she's like, what the fuck are you thinking? And he says, I'm trying to do better and make something out of my life. We're not together anymore. I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing it for me so I can be free from the mob. And when the mob finds out, they're going to be gunning for my ass too. So I am fucked regardless. So Josh proceeds to give him his favorite, a grilled cheese sandwich. And that grilled cheese sandwich is burnt to a fucking crisp. And he says, oh, he bites into it like, dude, it's not great. Walks away. If I was Dex, I'll leave a Yelp review. Dear Yelp, I went to Bobby's on this day. My ex-girlfriend was my server, and she was very rude to me. Poor customer service. She gave me this burnt-ass grilled cheese sandwich. I used to fix that for her when we lived together, and it was terrible. Burnt to a crisp. The cheese was stuck to the bread, no flavor. I felt offended. She cooked this sandwich very angrily. And I feel like if you're going to Bobby's, don't date the server. Don't date the waitress. They overcharge you. They want 25% off top for a tip, and I ain't paying a shit. So don't you patronize Bobby's, especially if you dated a waitress there, because they're going to fuck up your order and they're going to make your dining experience absolutely fucking miserable. I give this shithole a star. Kelly's was better under better management pre-gentrification.
Oh my God.
Sign Dex, who can't shoot for shit, soon to be proud member of the PCPD. Yes, here's your preview right there. But back to Trina and Curtis. Now this portion of the show. So, Jasmine, we've seen Curtis's journey, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
We went through the shooting, the paralysis, the experimental surgery, the rehab, the recovery of it all. I had no idea that Curtis was bullied. I had no idea that people bumped into him. They threw bowls at Curtis where he was sitting, and he took it. And, you know, water and drinks and food was spilled in his lap. I didn't see any of this at the Savoy. All I saw was him rolling up before the club opened,
mm-hmm.
and doing bon voyage parties for his daughter and for Spencer. I didn't see a single spilt drink on his lap during any of this. He told me that he had spilt drinks and spilt food. And he just felt, oh, I just went through so much. I didn't see any of this shit.
Nope.
So I couldn't connect with any of this. But Trina says, I'm so proud of you. You overcame so much. And I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. Well, I'm sorry too, Trina, because we didn't see any of that bullshit. He's a fucking liar. That's what he is. But anywho, after we got through that interesting rewrite, we had Trina talk about how important this place was to her and Spencer because they spent a lot of time there.
Hmm.
And I want to clarify something. Yeah, they spent time there. They've had moments. They've had good moments. They've had contentious moments. They've had moments of love and tenderness. One of my favorite all-time Kelly's moments was last year when they were sitting down and they were flirting and shit. And Spencer saying, are we playing the game? Or was the game playing us, acting all smooth and shit before he glitched when Trina friend-zoned his ass and he was basically reduced to being the cutest golden retriever? Yeah, that was hot. And then, you know, after that, when it became a couple, let me do my math. They had zero dates at Bobby's and or Kelly's. Mm-hmm. And they have no outside dinner dates or inside dinner dates. Yeah, we had the bench moment outside, but that's before they became a couple. The only time they went back to Bobby's as an official couple was what? Halloween to do some decorations? Otherwise, they've never had a date at Bobby's. So yeah, the place is important, but not for dates. That's a fact. No lies. And so she talks about, once again, him walking through that door, her looking up and seeing him, but she knows that's a fantasy. And then Curtis says, oh, I'm so sorry about that, Trina. But you know what? Like myself and what I went through, this too shall pass. You too shall heal. And you'll find love again and you will be loved again. And then, you know, she says, you're only saying that because you're my dad. She used that word a lot that episode. Woo. And he says, yes, but no one in the world is more deserving of love than you. And I was like, yeah, that's true. But let me tell you something. The only love that I want to see re-enter Trina's life is Spencer Cassadine. I don't want no new love interest for Trina, with all due respect. No, the love of her life is Spencer Cassadine. She has always said that, and she's going to stand on that business until otherwise noted. So no funny business, GH. You have Spencer swim his thick ass home to the woman he loves. Stop bullshitting with that, okay? I don't like that language being used. Ursula says, this too shall pass too, and you know, it's too soon to talk about finding love and whatnot. You damn right, because there's one love of her life, and it's Spencer Cassadine. No one else. Anybody else who rose up, you're going to be a worry bitch. And you don't want to be a worry bitch, because we're not going to give a fuck. Period.
So when Trina came through the door with Curtis, when they walked through the door at Bobby's, I said, as you say, pause, flag on the plate. I was like, you mean to tell me, because I jumped ahead, but I'm like, you mean to tell me Trina found out that her daddy is on his feet off screen? Like, I was literally like, what is happening? Like, what are we doing? Like, we actually didn't get to see her overjoyed over this. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fine. But when Jocelyn started that slow clap and had all those people clapping, I just thought about Not Another Teen Movie when Melissa Joan Hart says, you can't just start on a slow clap any old time. It has to be the right moment. You have to wait for the right moment. But I thought, this is not the right moment, nor will it ever be the right moment. And I just thought to myself, these people don't know Curtis. Like, girl, what are you doing? This slow clap would have made more sense at the Savoy, you know, the club that he owns. That is more appropriate to me. Like, that would have been the exact perfect time for him to walk into the Savoy and everybody, all the waitresses, all the staff sees him. And then they're like, oh my gosh, boss man's back and he's up on his feet. But this, him walking into Bobby's and strangers are sitting at the table, this held no weight for me. Like, they were like, when I actually looked around the room at the table to see who was all sitting there. And I was like, is there anybody familiar in here? I was like, I saw Felicia, but I'm like, everybody else. I'm like, there is nobody here who knows this man. Why are you doing this? Like, first of all, it's uncomfortable. And like you said, it's awkward as hell. It's literally like when somebody sings happy birthday to you, you just sit there kind of like, what do I do right now? Like, they're singing happy birthday to me. I'm just gonna sit here. Like, it was just weird. It was so out of place. It just didn't make sense to me at all when that happened. But, you know, Jocelyn sitting down with Trina taking her break and them seeing that Dex is in there, and, you know, Curtis being the voice of reason and saying, like, I know something's going on with you guys. Just go over there and be the bigger person. And she drops off that grilled cheese sandwich to him. Like, when I was watching that moment, all I thought was, I thought about this is so petty. Like, you know, you're talking about be the bigger person, but then you go and you serve him a burnt sandwich. So that's not you being the bigger person. And I'm like, and correct me if I'm wrong, Miss Missy, you broke up with him. He didn't break up with you. You broke up with him. So why in the world are you bringing him burnt sandwiches? And also, why are you snooping in his business, yanking up his PCPD paperwork? He ain't your man no more, right? So why are you worried about what he's doing? Like, I mean, why are you concerned about his career goals? If he wants to go and join the PCPD, you let that man join the PCPD and let him enjoy his sandwich and stuff in peace. But anyway, enough of that, okay? Enough of that right there. So going back to Trina and Curtis, like when they were sitting there talking and Felicia came by and, you know, she said her nice little thing to him. I was like, that was sweet. But I felt the same way where I was like, you brought Christina Wagner out for this just so she could be like, it's good to see you. But I also did appreciate it only because I'm like, okay, there's somebody else interacting with Trina and, you know, for a change other than just the same people that she's, you know, stuck with. Like, I'm like, I just felt kind of like, hopefully this is like, you know, leading us to her having more interaction with the other cast members besides just the same people she's like siloed with all the time. But anyway, the conversation that she was having with Joss, which I forgot to mention about her talking about, like, about how she's trying to figure out if she's going to be going back to PCU or if she's going to go back to Paris. Like, I thought that was actually interesting when Joss was saying, like, you know, they're reaching out to me to find out if I'm going to get a new roommate or whatnot. And she's basically saying, like, I still haven't decided if I'm going to go back to PCU or Paris. So I actually was kind of like, it gave me this moment of, is it with the writers that they don't know what they want Trina to do yet? Like, that's what it feels like. It feels kind of like, and then I'm just like, okay, like, I actually had a moment where I was like, okay, if Trina does decide to go back to Paris and to go back to the Sorbonne, then I would love that because that would be like a perfect place for her and Spencer to have a reunion. Because yes, listeners, I still want my reunion, my Sabrina reunion, whether that is Nicholas Alexander Chavez and Spencer or somebody else, we still want Sabrina. Like, I'm going on this here show to say we still want Sabrina, Spencer, and Trina, okay? Because that dialogue with Curtis talking about you'll find love again or whatever, I was like, no, I'm not here for that. I'm not here for her with this new love stuff because, you know, it's like let's break it down because this is the thing. Like, people are really, like, working my nerves over this saying that they supposedly, allegedly want Trina to be with some rando dude, like some new rando dude that just comes around. And I'm like, Trina just going with some random dude would not make sense because Trina chose to give her virginity to Spencer. And I'm like, all these people are just acting like they want her to say, well, that was that, on to the next dick. Excuse my vulgarity, but that's what it feels like. It feels like everybody wants that. Like, they're just kind of like, move on from that. Like, we spent all this time waiting for Spencer and Trina to get into a relationship. They weren't even together for a year. before he went off that ship. Their year anniversary happened this month, okay? And they were not together because guess what? He's presumed dead in France. So I don't want to hear any more of this. She needs to move on. I want to see her with a new love interest and this, that, and the other. I'm not here for any of that. I'm not here for it at all. But, you know, the spoiler said that Curtis was comforting Trina. And, like, I just found myself listening to the dialogue that was taking place. Because when he was talking to her about, like, all that stuff, like, what you brought up about him talking about how he was bullied and feeling helpless in the wheelchair, all I thought, like, you know, when he talked about, like, drinks being spilled on him and people bumping into him, I just felt like, oh, the writers, they just needed to write in a reason for why he wasn't at his own club. Like, that's how it felt to me, because I would have believed that if we actually saw those things happening to him when he was at the club. But guess what? They never put him in there. Like, they rarely put him in his club. And like you said, Keela, when he was at the club, it was closed. The patrons weren't in there. Like, I think he went to the Savoy one time with it open since he was in that wheelchair. But every other time we've seen him, he's been there after hours, like, or before the club is going to open. So he's never been there, like, you know, like, he's never been wheeling around or sitting down, like, you know, in the area where somebody just happens to knock over a drink and it spills on him, or maybe a waitress were to come by and bump into him and spill a drink. Like, we didn't see any of that. So I was like, why would you write that in there? Like, why would you write this, like, this off-screen struggle for Curtis in there? Because it doesn't do anything for me. I even looked at the TV and said, what are we doing? Because it just was like, okay, fine, whatever, if that's what you want to do. But, you know, when Trina talked about missing Spencer and, like, expecting him to come through the door to Bobby's and talking about all this, you know, all the time that they spent there, I had that moment too where I paused and I was like, all the time you spent there. And this is my thing, because I know this was a point of contention for some people, because they disagreed. Like, you know, some people disagree with what, you know, a lot of our feelings on Spencer and Trina spending a lot of time at Kelly's, because, I mean, they spent time at Kelly's together. But if we're gonna look at it from a standpoint of relationship wise, as far as them being a couple, no, they didn't. They didn't. And I understand that they had, like, key moments there, like, you know, the conversation that they had when he asked her, what are we doing? Like, is the game playing us, or, you know, are we playing the game, or is the game playing us? And of course, they had that, you know, that emotional moment too outside on the bench after Spencer got out of Pentonville, when he was talking about, like, he's basically pouring his heart out to Trina, but she's not really picking up on it. Those two moments are key moments that were important in, you know, Spencer and Trina's relationship. But if we're going to go back to Sabrina 1.0, for example, yes, I'm going that far back. Sabrina 1.0 was in Kelly's together, but he had a girlfriend. Esme was in Kelly's with him during that time. Spencer and Trina had, like, a little flirtatious moment here or there at Kelly's, but, you know, and he had, like, his moment of giving her comfort after she found out about Portia and Curtis and, you know, the affair, like, when she, you know, sat down and had that, you know, that good conversation with him. Okay, there was that. But then when we go to, like, the 2022 parts of Kelly's, they're not dealing with each other, because Trina's being accused of revenge porn. So, like, their moments that they're having at Kelly's, they're fighting with each other. Like, you know, she's basically got, like, you know, over him, because they're not getting along. So they're not really having moments at Kelly's. And then we fast forward to 2023 when they do become a couple, and they're never at Kelly's as a couple. Like, even before they became a couple, when they were at Kelly's after their first kiss, they didn't really have too much interaction. It was them talking about Esme, and, you know, they were talking about Cameron when he was going to be, that he was moving to California. So then you go to them as a couple, and when they are a couple, they are not at Kelly's dating as a couple. They are at Kelly's, like you said, Keela, working. They come to Kelly's in October, and they are decorating for Halloween, for a Halloween party. That's not a date. So to me, they didn't have, like, true moments that they could say, like, we were having romantic time here. Like, that's what I heard, for me at least. Like, I'm not, you know, obviously I'm not speaking for everybody else, but that's what I heard. Like, that was my interpretation when Trina talked about spending a lot of time there, because those were the moments where, like, they would have had, like, the good, or, you know, the good type of moments. But in all honesty, they didn't have like real true date moments there. That wasn't a thing. Like that just wasn't a thing that happened. So, I mean, it was hard for me to feel that way. Like, obviously I did feel like, oh, cause I thought back, you know, when she talked about wanting to see him come through the door, I thought about when he walked through the door of Kelly's on New Year's Eve, when she was talking to Ava, cause that was the moment that stood out to me. But as far as like anything else, I was just kind of like, okay, yeah, whatever. But like, I was trying to feel some kind of investment watching the Curtis and Trina scenes, but I didn't feel it the way I should have. Like, I just like, because it was like, okay, she's happy for him. But I feel like for me, at least, it would have felt more, I would have felt it more if Trina had actually been in the room to see him walking. Like, it would have felt like more believable to me, the excitement that she was having in her saying she's proud of him, if we had actually gotten to see her have the moment to witness it. And I don't know why the writers chose not to give that to Trina and Curtis, because it's like, if you're trying to make us buy into this relationship that Curtis and Trina have, then there's key moments that you should be trying to put in there. Like, just having them sit down and talk to each other after the fact, after he's been walking, that did nothing for me.
It did nothing for me either. Those scenes, to me, I cannot believe I'm about to say this. And for Lindsay, my girl, you know what I'm about to say, because it was giving fraud sushi.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing they said was believable in the script,
mm-hmm.
because we never saw it. No dates at Kelly's, no bullying at mm-hmm. the club. Yep. Nothing. It never happened. I feel like Jonathan Franks from It Never Happened. Didn't exist. You made it up. It's fiction. It's a thing. None of this ever happened. That's how I felt. It felt like a tack-on scene, and nothing about it felt authentic to me, because it wasn't rooted in reality. There was elements of it, but for the most part, I didn't buy into it. And honestly speaking, it could have been kept off.
Mm-hmm.
I could have dealt with another week. It would have sucked. But give me something meatier than that. I even said that in a tweet. Like, this episode for Trina is lacking seasoning mm-hmm. and meat on the bone. And when you're not going to do that, I rather starve.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say that, but I rather starve, because I don't want bullshit. I want greatness that we got a couple of weeks ago when she was at that graveyard spilling her heart out. That was believable. That was rooted in reality. And I cried my eyes out. This, I felt like, oh, here, this is a thing. And you can tell this is a thing. And that beforehand that we saw at the graveyard was something meaningful, if they knew they had to go back and clean up. But unfortunately, we got this scene tacked on instead, and it just kind of watered down what we got a little bit, not much, but I can see through it, because what they wrote wasn't rooted in what we know to be true.
Mm-hmm. Like, if we had seen, like I said, if we saw Curtis at the Savoy having like issues, like trying to get around, and somebody bumped into him and spilled a drink that because they didn't see him, then okay, fine, we would believe that. Or even like seeing him when he was, well, you know, because we saw that one little moment where he was at the house when he had the cup in his, when I think he had a cup or something in his lap, but nothing happened with the cup. Like, I honestly thought he was gonna spill something. Like, when I was watching, I was like, oh, like I was ready for it. Like, I was ready to be like, oh my gosh, he's gonna spill his, like, you know, he's wheeling out with his coffee and it's gonna spill. But it didn't. So I'm like, there, it wasn't like they weren't really showing us any moments where they could have had, where they could throw that dialogue in. Like, they didn't do that. And I also felt like the reason why we didn't buy into it so much too is because it was like, we've already done this with you, like that, like, you know, minus the walking part, it just was like, we've already done the Curtis comforts Trina thing time and time again. Where is her mom? Like, that's what I kept saying, because even going into this week, you know, going into that week, I was already annoyed when I saw Curtis comforts Trina as a spoiler. And not to say that I have a problem with Curtis, it's just, I want to see Trina with her mother at some point. It's like, can we do that again? Because it would have been nicer to me if we saw her and her mom somewhere, like if she and her mom were getting coffee, or like I said, they were at Kelly's having lunch instead of her and Curtis. Like, was like, why does it have to be her and Curtis all the time? Like, I get that they're trying to establish the bond between her and Curtis, but it's, but it feels like they're just like they're forcing it down our throats. Like they're trying to, like, it's trying to be like, this is what's happening and this is how it's going to be. It almost feels like, cause you know, obviously I know there's a lot of Taggart fans. It almost feels like they're like, it's this thing that they want to keep doing where they're like, stop thinking about Taggart. Like, because that's not going to happen. Like, that's how it feels. It feels like we're not bringing Taggart back into this at all. It's just going to, it's going to be Curtis and Trina. Curtis is her dad. So you guys get used to it. That's who you're going to see. Which, like I said, like, I don't have a problem with Curtis, but balance is always the main word for me. And I'm feeling like there's a huge imbalance with this parent dynamic for Trina.
Definitely. And the scenes they had back in February at the house when he comforted Trina the first time was way better than this.
Exactly.
Way better. Like, that was a good day for them. It was a great day for Tabby. I loved her performance. And most importantly, it was rooted in realism because we felt it, heard it, the callbacks to her world turning gray like Spencer's did a couple of years ago. All of that was rooted in realism. This alternate universe. This was Earth 28 that we got on that Thursday's GH because I didn't buy any of it. Unfortunately, and that really speaks to some writers not knowing the essence of Trina and Curtis by extension, because what he went through never fucking happened. And show us, not tell us. That's the key. If those things happened to him when he was paralyzed, I needed to see it. I didn't need to hear about it because that takes me out of the moment because I never saw it with my own two eyes. It wasn't addressed until after he got to walk again. Definite choices there in storytelling. But now we have beat around the triangle of bush long enough, Jasmine. Had to go there. Now it's time to talk about the thing that scarred viewers everywhere. Ugh. Last week. Now, just a couple of weeks ago on this very broadcast, I was a supporter of hate sex between Nina and Drew. One of my favorite tropes is enemies to lovers. And when done right, it is brilliant. And my blueprint is Sammy and Lucas from 2003 to 2004 from Days of Our Lives, when I got the angst I needed, that I craved, and I got as a fan. And even though I'm not the biggest fan of Drewfus, I can see the chemistry between Drew Novocaine and Nina. I saw it. Cynthia Watros is a marvel at being this sultry seductress that can deliver lines like nobody's business, that I can buy in, that I can actually sit back and say, I see the vision. And then I wished I had no vision when it was over. Because what we got Tuesday, I could not believe my eyes. So as you said before, we had Willow and Michael have their pre-wedding anniversary dinner at the Metro Court, a place that Nina owns 50% of for now. If you hate your mama so much, why are you there? You got the PC Grill. You got Cafe Sherry. You have Bobby's if you want to dine on a dime. Get the family discount. Pay for free. Hey, how about that? There's plenty of options. Charlie's Pub, you know, there's options for you to eat elsewhere in Port Charles, but you chose your mama's place of business. And when your mother offers your table complimentary bubbly, you say, we don't want that. Get away from our table, you bitch. You know what I would have did, Nina? I would have kicked them the fuck out of my restaurant. You ungrateful bitches. Why are you here? You hate me so much, but you like the food. You like the ambiance. You ungrateful bitches. I would have kicked Willow and Michael's ass clean out. Garcon, get them. You're damn right. Ungrateful asses. So she gonna go upstairs. She gonna go to Drew's office. Of all places, to cry on his shoulder about Willow disrespected me again. I would have been crying. I would have kicked her ass out. But anyway, she in his office crying. And Drew, you know, to a point, I understand what he's saying. Like, I ain't got no sympathy for you because, girl, you put me in jail, basically. Like, I don't want you crying on my shoulder for. But she was like, can you help me? And I'm like, why are you begging him for help of all people? I want to repair my relationship with Willow. and you have an in with them and Michael, obviously. And what if you put me on the board at Aurora and Michael has to be around me? He has to acknowledge me. He has to talk to me. And therefore, that's an opening so I can talk to Willow and I can rebuild our relationship. And Drew is having none of that. They're having this very toxic back and forth conversation. It's very uncomfortable. There's an S rating, so I'm already afraid. And so as she turns Drew around to get his attention, his shirt magically pops open. Every button goes pop, 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 pop. And all you see are abs. It's the magical revealing shirt. Marvels in wardrobe, I tell you. And she is just like, just like I'm talking. She's like, wow, look at the body on him. And I looked respectfully to like, damn, he looks good. I ain't gonna lie. I mean, I respect the body that's built and got abs. You know, I prefer my Spencer Cassidy thickness, but I can respect abs when I see them. And so then we get this most atrocious dialogue. Drew, has Carly ever told you that you have a really nice body? Oh, I said, oh my God. And then Drew says, you've only seen half of it. I'm like, what in the Brazzers is going on here? And they proceed to have the worst foreplay dialogue I have heard in some time. And let me tell you something. We all grown here. If you're over 18, you know what's up. Listen, if you watch porn, if you watch the good stuff, if you watch Balesa House, if you watch that kind of pornography, oh, the dialogue is hit. And sometimes the acting's quite good. And the chemistry is kimming. And the sex is fantastic. I appreciate the performances. It has you locked in. This dialogue was appalling. I was like, what are they talking about? Oh, you a Boy Scout, and I'm a good girl, and I like to be bad sometimes, and can't you just bend me over and have your way with me? Like, I'm making up some of this stuff, but that's basically the crux of this dialogue of them having this foreplay, flirting and shit. So they're going back and forth. Are you scared? Do you want this? You see me? You see what I can do? Let me unbutton my blouse. You see my black bra? It's like, it's so covering up my bosom. And when you take it off, and when you take it off, you're going to see all of my breasts and full exposure. And you're just going to be like into it, right? And she undoes her shirt. And like, he looks at her and they proceed to make out. They make out some more. They make out some more. And then they do it on the floor, not the table. I mean, not on a sturdy surface, the floor. The floor sucks. Floor sex is very uncomfortable. It's hard to get the angle right on the floor. So we leave them there. My God, it happened. Talk about an eclipse on Monday. I was eclipsed on Tuesday after this shit. My God. Terrible dialogue. I brought up the Spice Channel in my tweet.
Oh my God.
They're weeping. The Spice Channel is weeping somewhere because they're like, what is this? What in the pool boy is this going on here? Our pizza delivery guy back in the day had way better dialogue than this shit. So the Spice Channel's weeping. Brazzers is laughing at the caption the following day. Drew planted seeds. That was a real GH caption. So we come back on Wednesday. And you would think that hate sex, what I don't know, bring people closer together. Oh no, these two are still arguing. And Drew had the temerity to say that his dick game went 45 minutes.
What?
I said, who thought?
Lies.
Who thought? Timeout flag on the play. I got a challenge. Who told you to tell us that you could last 45 minutes? Now, my people on Twitter said, did he mean 4 to 5 minutes? I said, maybe that's what you meant to say. Because 45 minutes on the floor is crazy. But I'm saying, were they doing missionary, prone bone, reverse cowgirl, cowgirl, doggy, like in 45, and he lasted that long? Impressive. Good for you. The cleaning crew is going to have a goddamn time on that floor. The Bissell is going to be vacuuming the fuck out of that floor. Let me tell you. My God. OxiClean can't clean some stuff up. I'm just saying. So after all of this hate sex, they still hate each other. There's no warmth. And what gets me is the fact that Drew did not apologize for what he said back in January about him swinging on Nina if she wasn't a woman. That dialogue still sits with me in a negative way because I'm all about haters to lovers. I went through Lumi, Sammy and Lucas. One of the first moves Playboy made back in 99 was when Sammy was about to get death by a lethal injection for a crime she didn't commit. And Lucas ran up there at the last minute and he saved her life. His mama said, let that bitch die. But he said, no, that's the mother of my child. And I can't let that happen despite how much I hate her. And that laid the foundation for years of them eventually falling in love. And I was into it. I remember I faked being sick some days to be home for Lumi days. I pulled a Ferris Bueller, sure the fuck did, tricked my mama. Said, mama, I can't go to school. I'm a little feverish. I'm a little sweaty. My hands are a little clammy. And she believed me. And I had to get my Lumi in that day. I love them. I love that storyline back in 03 when Sammy fell through those French doors and cut up her throat because she couldn't talk. And then she was in the hospital and she started dreaming about Lucas out of nowhere. And they had fantasies for months. And they kept dreaming about each other. And eventually they did it. And it was worth it. Cover SOD. I bought that shit. I read it because I was invested. And I wanted to care about Drew and Nina. But you have these people arguing and shit. And she's still begging this man. And like she's trying to trade favors.
Mm-hmm.
Trading. Oh, I broke your back. So now you can help me get close to my daughter. Like, what the fuck is this? Like a week ago, Valentine said, remember who you are, Nina. Mm-hmm. You a bad bitch. You a baddie. Remember who you are. Reclaim your power. And you got this woman groveling toward this motherfucker who don't give a shit. Tell me, oh, you got to do better than that. I got all this carpet burn on me. Like, what in this dialogue is this? It was so bad. Like, I didn't care. And then Cameron Mathis said, I got to call you out too, homie. You spoiling shit the day before. You letting us know ahead of time, oh yeah, it's going down. Mm-hmm. And like at first, I'm kind of excited about it. But then you liking stuff to my, oh yeah, Nina likes Carly Sloppy Seconds. Like you liking stuff like that. So it took me out of the moment already. But then the dialogue the day before didn't help matters either. And then the follow through was even worse. And then he throws his shirt at her and dismisses her. Like how the fuck am I going to get behind this? Like y'all are a soap opera. What you're supposed to be good at is tropes. How do you fuck up a haters to lovers trope, enemies to lovers? How do you ruin that? And I'm looking at Patrick because that day on Wednesday was your day, homie. That was your day. Your name came first, so therefore you got to get the smoke. I can't exempt you from that. You the dialogue king, right? This dialogue was fucking terrible. I'm looking at Lucky Goldie wrote the breakdown and Catherine Lepard, she wrote the script, the same person who wrote about the punch that Drew would have hit on Nina if she wasn't a woman. She wrote that alongside Suzanne fucking Flynn. They wrote that shit back in January. I don't forget stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So these two collaborated on this shit and Patrick's name was at the top alongside Corte. I can't give it a pass. It was bad. And it just ruined whatever hope I had for Nina and Drew. And I just wanted more. Like, y'all had something really good, and Cameron in some way pissed on him by being an ass, by liking stuff that wasn't cool, and then the execution was bad. And I feel for Cynthia because she's doing the best of what she's given, but I know, like, this material isn't hitting, and she's saying as much via her social media movement, so I feel for her. And this was embarrassing for General Hospital. Mm-hmm. Like, this show got dragged up the ass both days because this was appalling. This wasn't good. It was degrading. It was disrespectful. And it was offensive.
Yeah, I agree with all of this. Like, It was like, first off, it started with the Willow and Michael stuff, which, by the way, I'm like, when I was watching Willow and Michael, when they said they were celebrating their anniversary early so that they, so as not to conflict with Chase and Brooklyn's nuptials, all I thought was, oh, so GH does know how to remember anniversaries. I'm like, hi, I'm talking to you about Sabrina and their July 4th anniversary that wasn't, you know, when they became a couple and they spent the 4th of July separated when they should have actually been together since it would have been their first 4th of July as a couple. But, you know, they decided to send him in a parenting class with, you know, someone else and had her in the park with someone else. But I digress. But yeah, no, I felt the same way watching Willow be a bitch to Nina, because that's what she was. She was a bitch. She always is. And I can't stand it. So I felt the same way where I was just like, when she said, I thought I made it clear that I didn't want to see you. I'm like, then why are you in her restaurant, dummy? Like, talking about, oh, I brought you here. Michael's talking about, I brought you here because I know you like the chocolate mousse. She also likes the dessert at Bobby's, too. So you could have taken her there. But whatever. But I got irritated too when Nina went to go see Drew, because I'm like, how did we get here? Why are you going up here to beg Drew for help? Like, I get it. Like, I got it, you know, slightly because, like, you know, she knows that Drew was close with Willow and he did a lot helping her during the stuff that was going on with her when he was helping her try to figure out, you know, the stuff about her mom for the bone marrow. And so she knows that he's, you know, been one of the people who's been in Willow's corner. So I can understand that. But I just hated watching her groveling and asking him and saying, like, get me in and, like, having me get into Aurora Media and this, that, and the other. And when he was basically like, no, I'm not going to do that. And as he was walking away, when she pulled his shirt and it ripped open like he was a Chippendales dancer, I was like, what kind of cheap ass shirt is he wearing that it rips open that much from her just reaching for his arm? That was so stupid. Like, and then it just got worse from there, because I'm the same way with, like, you know, because when we talked about how we, what our take was on the, you know, the Drew and Nina, you know, love, you know, enemies to lovers trope thing, I was, you know, I was on the fence of it. And I said, you know, if, you know, they fix that horrible dialogue, that moment of him talking about wanting to punch her, if they fix that, then I could have been for it. But for them to just, like, haul off and have the two of them have that cringe-worthy dialogue, that Skinamax-related dialogue, like, when she said that line to him about, has Carly ever told you you have a nice body, I immediately was taken out of it. Like, it immediately took me out of it. I'm like, why are you doing this? Like, why are you saying this? Like, because this is the thing. When they had her say that, I was just basically like, we have to insert Carly in every single moment. Like, why are you having this come out of Nina's mouth? Who says that? Who's going to sit up and look at a man after the shirt comes off and say, has your ex-girlfriend ever told you you have a nice body? Like, why the hell would Nina even care what Carly thinks about Drew's body? Like, why? Like, they're in the moment with they're in the moment with each other talking, so there's no reason for her to bring Carly up whatsoever. None. But as I kept listening to the dialogue, it just got even cringier, because, like, with the whole thing with, like, them talking to each other about, like, you know, about good girls and whatever it was that he said, and then he was like, when they kissed each other and then they stopped kissing, and then she was basically kind of like, what are you doing? Because, you know, he stopped kissing her, and then he's like, a man lets a lady say no, and then she's like, am I saying no? I was just like, oh my gosh. Because the thing is, for me, it made Nina look bad, because it was like Nina was coming on to him. Because she was the first person to say something. She was the one who said, has Carly ever told you you have a nice body? So that only added to that thing where these people were out there saying, Nina's always going after Carly's sloppy seconds. She just loves them and blah, blah, blah. So I hated that. Like, I really did. I hated that line. But when she and Drew started hooking up, like when they had sex on the floor, I also went to this thought process where I was kind of like, which, you know, screw Sonny because he's trash anyway, but I still felt like, how did we get from Nina wanting to fight tooth and nail for her marriage and refusing to sign divorce papers to her hopping on the floor with Drew And then also, like you said, this pep talk that Valentin gave her, where he was basically like, you don't need anybody. Like, you do you. Like, you're Nina. Like, you're Nina Reeves. Remember who you are. But then she's groveling to Drew. And then after the sex, the next episode after that, just watching that too, like, I felt the same way you did, where I was just like, this dialogue is even worse because he's making her, he's talking to her like she's a whore. Like, that's basically how he was. He was talking to her just like that. Cause like, even her, like, even the way she was basically making it, like, consider this my down payment. I was like, did she actually just say that? Did she really just say those words? Like, did I just hear that? I actually rewound my TV back because I wasn't sure that's what I heard her say. And I was like, no, she actually turned this sex with Drew into a transaction. And then he talks about it's going to take more than 45 minutes and a rug burn. Cringy all around. And I didn't like it either when he threw the shirt at her, when he was like, mend this, and she said, mend it yourself, and she threw it back. And when she almost hit him, like, when she almost slapped him, when they were arguing with each other, like, this was, if there's a way to ruin hate sex, GH, bravo, you succeeded in doing that. Like, if anybody wants to go to learn how to ruin a trope, just turn on your TV and watch GH. Because they know how to ruin a trope. They really do. Because this was not it. Like, I was interested to see where this was going to go. But honestly, I felt like it happened too fast. Like, Nina and Drew hopping on the floor happened far too fast for my liking. Like, I felt like they needed a few more scenes of them not getting along before this even happened. Because it was just like them back and forth in each other's offices. Like, you know, him showing up to the Invader and, Crimson. Him showing up to Crimson and, oh no, it was the Invader. Showing up the Invader. Well, he's showing up at Crimson too. Showing up at the Invader, Crimson, her going to his office, back and forth, back and forth. I just felt like there wasn't, like, it should have been more of a buildup. But yeah, this was, I don't know, if Patrick, if this dialogue was all you, this was not good.
This was very bad. This was the week that broke a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame them, because this was very offensive, mm-hmm, in every way. And I was offended. Also, from another enemies to lovers trope, I love Buffy, love Spike. Fucked a whole building down, mm-hmm, off of a fight that was so much better than this, mm-hmm, shit. And it was a physical fight. But you know what? They fucked all of their problems away. And I appreciated that in one of the hottest scenes you would ever see in any medium. Point blank, period. And in soaps, y'all are the masters at this. This should be easy for you. And they failed the assignment. And I realized this week that the Nina hate in that writer's room, that agenda is live, mm-hmm, and very well. The trash talking, the shit talking, all of it. Every day this week, egregious, mm-hmm, over the top, went way too far. And it's just way too much for me. And, you know, I just thought it was just bad, bad, bad episode Wednesday. On top of that, we had Ava, who couldn't sleep. Mm. She's alone and she needed something. So she rummaged around Sunny's bedroom trying to find some pills. Went to the bathroom, got some pills. And I think she found his bipolar medication, because according to the medication, it causes sleepiness, potentially drowsiness. That's what she needs. She popped a few pills and she said, this shit ain't working. I'm still up. Sonny, what's this doing for you? So that might be a clue that the medication's been tampered with by order of Valentin. And that's just a plot point. I get that. But a couple of weeks ago, we had Ava being a smart cookie and being at his house for a reason. And now I'm wondering why the fuck she's there. And, you know, when she said that she couldn't sleep, you know, there's a solution to that. Ava. You know, there's economy-sized dildos sold at sex stores across America. And economy-sized, I mean porn stars, they cast their dick in some cases and they mold it and they sell it. So if you need something, get you one of them. Buy it. Take care of yourself. Sleep immediately. You don't need no pills for that. Just saying. That's how you cure your sleeplessness. Friendly advice. Just saying. On episode 69 of the Spring of Sessions. Wink, wink. So that storyline was stupid as well. But also on Wednesday's GH. Can't leave this part out. So we had Curtis walk up the stairs to his bedroom that no longer looks like Spencer's. Praise God. Now it looks like Sunny's when they changed the set decor. But I will say that Portia and Curtis's bedroom looks lovely. Looks well furnished. Looks very, 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 very nice. It is courtesy of Rooms to Go mahogany. Love that for them. So Portia is going to catch Curtis in the bedroom. Like, he's standing up. He's tired, but he made it through. And he's checking the books at the Savoy, and he's trying to see if Blaze going to perform there. Please cancel that booking. No shade. And Portia is having a day after cursing out properly Laura, Alexis, and Kevin for their dim-witted idea. Oh, Portia, we went to visit Heather earlier that day, and this was last week's GH, nearly 2 weeks ago. And Portia, who I am starting to really appreciate again, and this is some of the good writing that we've gotten, and that for the past few months, you know, her role as co-chief of staff has basically blunted her reaction to certain people, Heather in particular, but she's got her smoke back. She noticed that Heather didn't have her restraints on, and she was like, what the hell is going on here? She has smoke. She had an attitude. I was here for it. And then we had Kevin and Laura saying, have you noticed that Heather's different? And Portia's like, nope, same crazy bitch to me. And she's like, y'all forgot like what she did to my daughter, what she's done to your family, multiple families across town. And you expect me to offer glowing reviews for, oh, she's different and she's old, poor Heather. And she had a bad hip and it made her do really bad, murderous things. And you want me to say, oh, she's okay. She's different. She's nice. She's remorseful. No, we did that with Esme last year. I'm tired of this shit. And like, you're not around long enough with me and my staff dealing with this crazy bitch all the goddamn time. But here you are trying to offer legal advice on how to reverse charges on a serial killer. And Alex trying to get an attitude. Some, oh, well, don't hold back. Well, weren't you at the docks last year when Heather basically told your nephew he was next? You forgot about that? And then Laura is incredulous, wondering why Portia's so mad, and Kevin side-eyeing everybody saying, what the fuck are we doing as a collective? But then his dumb ass this week, it's a possibility. I'm looking into it. Oh, let's try to help Heather. Oh, what will people think, Kevin? What will Sasha Gilmore and Portia Robinson, not Trina, apparently, the most aggrieved victim in all of this, the hook killer's OG target and the people that she cared about, forget about her. Oh, what would they think if we tried to relitigate these charges on Heather because of her rusty hip? But we'll do that together because we are going to be there for her because she's different. I hope this is a big old swerve. I hope the fix is in and Heather fools all y'all asses and she snatches baby Ace and runs. Because if she doesn't do that, then the incompetence to try to rehabilitate another character is stupefying me. So last year it was amnesia. This year it is rusty ass hip syndrome. I'm tired, Jasmine. I am tired. I love Allie Mills. I do. But she is a shiny new toy that a certain executive producer is loving a little bit too much. And it seems like he's trying to salvage this character by trying to character assassinate Alexis, Kevin, and Laura for the 10,000th time in a year.
Yeah, I loved, absolutely loved the scenes with Portia getting to go off on everybody about the situation with Heather, because I'm not here for it either. I'm not here for this rusty hip redemption story. Like, it's just, it's stupid. And apparently, like, we found out, we kind of got an idea for how long, supposedly, allegedly, because I think it was Kevin that, Kevin mentioned, he said, it was like, talking about, it was nearly 20 years of talking about Heather, and I'm like, so I'm like, be for real. Like, are you serious? Like, are you actually going to try to say, oh wait, no, that was Molly? I think, I don't know. Maybe it might have been Molly, but she was talking, they were talking about the hip and talking about it being 20 years. I'm like, so we're going to say that 20 years is, that's 20 years ago, was that when she got the hip done? But I still don't care. Like, I don't care, because I'm like, we're going to try to make this and trying to rewrite history and say that a hip is the reason why she's the way she is. But Portia getting to go off on everybody, like, even when she went off on Alexis and was like, you're not even a lawyer anymore. So like, I was like, oh, woo. She had smoke for everybody in that room when she was talking about Heather and her situation. But like, while I loved it, I also couldn't help but feel like, why wasn't this something she could have done with Esme? Like, why did it have to be with Heather? Because Esme is the one who really did all this stuff to her daughter. Like, sure, Heather was the hook, and, you know, she is the hook, and she was targeting people close to Trina, but Esme was the one who actually did stuff directly to Trina, drugging her, framing her, all these different things, killing the love of her life. But Portia didn't get to do any reading of Esme. Like, she didn't get to say anything about that. It was just, I'm going off on everybody. And the crazy part about it was that everybody that she went off on in that hospital lobby was somebody that enabled Esme. Laura enabled her when she took her in and was basically validating all of her feelings, including the feelings that she had for Spencer. Alexis enabled Esme too. She gave her a job. She let her in. Like, she did a whole lot. She enabled her by not telling Spencer, hey, Esme has feelings for you, because she knew. Laura and Alexis knew, and they both failed Spencer on that front, because Trina was right when she said she has feelings for you and I think she wants you back, but they didn't even have the decency to tell him and give him a heads up. And then Kevin enabled Esme too, because guess what? When she got her memories back and she dropped Little Ace off, Spencer, what does Spencer say after she leaves? He says, well, did she seem a little bit off to you guys? And what does Kevin, the psychiatrist, say? No, she seemed fine to me. And guess what she does? Knocks him out and takes off to Paris to go after Spencer and Trina. Okay? So that's what I'm saying. Like, every single person she went off on has some relationship with Esme that caused the stuff that happened to Trina and Spencer. But Portia's going off about the mother of the one who did all this stuff. So I feel the same way you do, where I'm just kind of like, if this is really what they're going to do, because I was annoyed. I was very annoyed watching those Laura and Kevin scenes when they were having that conversation about Heather, and Kevin was basically like talking about doing what he could to try to get the charges, you know, charges dropped and whatnot. And I got irritated too listening to Laura run down the list of people that would be upset. And when she said Portia, I was like, okay, I get it. Portia is Trina's mom, but we're not going to throw Trina into this, because Trina was affected by things too. So can we stop acting like she doesn't exist? And it was crazy, because I forgot who it was, but somebody actually on Twitter like said to me that it's like something that really stuck out to me. And they said, like, well, Laura is like a big, important, you know, she's always been an important character on GH. She's like the matriarch and whatnot. So she, like, when she tells us that someone is important, like, that's what we're, you know, that's what we're told. Like, Laura is the one who tells us who to care about. And so for her to not mention Trina is basically telling the audience, oh, Trina doesn't matter. And I was like, whoa. Like, when she said that, like, that actually really hit me, because I'm like, that is what she's telling us. She's telling us Trina's, what happened with Trina doesn't really matter much. Cause it was like, it was all that heavy Esme Spencer dialogue again too, which is egregious. It was all this Esme and Spencer stuff all over again. So I'm feeling the same way you are, where I just feel like if this is going to be a rinse, wash and repeat storyline of like the basically like what they did with Esme and Laura, and it's going to be Esme's mama and Laura, whatever happens, happens. If Heather is playing all these folks, using her rusty hip as a way to get over on people, because she's already sat down across from Esme and told her, basically, we know how to manipulate people. That's what she told her. She basically let her know, like, it's in your genes. Like, it's in your blood. We know how to manipulate. So for all we know, Heather could be doing this exact same thing. She could be manipulating so she can take Ace, which, okay, have at it, because they're making Laura stupid. They're making everybody stupid again on the behalf of Heather. And I'm not for it. So it's like, if I feel the same way where I'm like, if they're just having this rusty hip be the thing, then it needs to go somewhere. Like, it can't just be we're doing this for the sole purposes of making Heather a good person, because I'm not here for that.
I'm not here for this redemption bullshit. I wasn't here for it last year with Esme and her amnesia. I'm not here for it with Metalosis doing the work for Heather's hip over the years. I don't care. I hope this is one big parody. And the swerve is Heather tricks everybody and she makes Laura and Kevin and Alexis look absolutely foolish. If Alexis happens to get her license back and this is the first case she takes and she wins and all hell breaks loose, I want to pop my popcorn. I want to drink a drink and laugh my ass off, because that will be the only way any of this makes sense. To do this again after what we went through last year with Esme, I cannot. So we shall see what will happen. If they are legit trying to redeem her, I don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I have no hope. Because at some point, when are you going to learn the lesson that some people are simply irredeemable? That some people are simply meant to be bad people that are meant to do crazy things? And sometimes they're meant to, I don't know, be bad people with irredeemable qualities. And until that is hammered home, we're stuck. But I'm trying to believe that the fix is in. If not, I don't know what to say. It's wholesale incompetence if it doesn't go the way it's supposed to go.
It's like, just let them be bad. Like, seriously, like, that's how I feel. I'm just, let them be the bad characters, because we know that Heather's back in Pentonville because she couldn't go to California because her hip. So I'm like, stop trying to make fetch happen. Like, stop trying to make these evil characters good, because it doesn't work. Like, I mean, I'm sorry, but it's like, you expect us to believe and buy that a bad hip made her do all this murdering and poisoning and all these different things. That's so unrealistic. Like, it is truly, truly unrealistic. Like, I don't know why they would even go in this direction. And like I said before, again, it just takes me back into the mindset of, so Patrick, Elizabeth, y'all decided to, instead of focusing on Trina and her grief and writing something for her, you decided, let's go into the writer's room and prioritize Heather Weber and her rusty hip. Somebody who's not on contract. Somebody who's a guest player. A guest player.
Yes. And to quote Uncle Phil from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, day damn one, Heather's hip. Mm-hmm. That was their first topic of discussion. That was in the agenda day one of the Mulcahy Corte era. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. And we'll see how far they go. I hope they don't go for redemption with zero consequences. Because if they do, I have no hope. Plain and simple. Because we've been down this road before. We fought against Esme for over a year to get her out of here, hopefully for good. Hoping for the same for Heather, but we shall see. As we now transition to Sabrina speculations for the week ahead. Things you can expect for our girl this week. And we see her just one day in the spoilers for Tuesday's GH. Trina, noted relationship counselor, questions Jocelyn and Dex about their relationship.
I am so annoyed by this, because I'm literally like, she doesn't tell the truth about her relationship. So why are we doing this? Like, why are we having her sit down and play relationship counselor to these two? Because they're both liars. Like, both of them are going to lie. I don't expect that they're going to tell her the truth of their relationship. So I'm just like, I don't understand why we're doing this. Like, I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me.
They have on prop duty. I'll watch because I support, but once again, it's like, I need meat on the bone. I need seasoning. I need everything. I need some hot sauce on it too. And you're not giving it to me. She's a talk to. She's propping a couple that's broken up. We'll see how it goes. My confidence level is pretty low. And I see the spoilers. And once again, one character is in episodes for sure. 4 out of the next 5 days. 8 out of the last 9. That's the reality. Could be 9 for 9. I'm not sure. But that's where we are. Oversaturation of a character and not enough from another character that deserves equal, balanced airtime. That is our problem with GH across the board. And I forgot to mention TJ talking to Hat Daddy Marshall about his relationship with Molly. So Molly's working late hours, not coming home till late. And he's already having buyer's remorse about the surrogacy with Christina carrying his baby. And hers essentially the term here. And, you know, the consequences of that. And Hat Daddy says, you know what, just have an open line of communication. Talk to Molly about it. And, you know, fix her a home-cooked meal. If she comes home late, have the thing ready made in the oven. And she can eat it from there. Like, it's a TV dinner. I'm like, cool. So Alexis and Molly talk at the office about Heather's rusty ass hip and hoping that Molly wasn't attributed in the article, but she ain't talking about TJ at all. Mm-mm. As if everything is good. So apparently it's going to be trouble in paradise. And for the love of soap heaven, can TJ please get messy if Molly can't sense trouble on the home front? It's asking for a lot. We'll see. But I have to have my guy working more than 3 days in 3 months to get a story when he should be in the story as a guy who's about to be a dad. But at the same time, he's wondering if this is the right decision.
Yeah, like they need to do better on that, because just watching this constant back and forth over and over and over again, where he's talking about the doubts that he's having about a baby that's already on its way, apparently in 3 months, because we saw his pregnancies now on GH. I feel like Taj, like, he's such a great actor. And we saw that, like, especially during the Mason scenes. So I'm like, give him something better than this. Because this storyline's getting on my nerves. And just watching him and Marshall having egg sandwiches in the park, just, yeah. And then him telling him, go home and fix a nice little dinner for Molly and just spend some time together. I was just like, okay, that's nice.
Sitting on the bench eating Egg McMuffins.
Mm-hmm. And we also didn't talk about Curtis and his new project, I guess.
Oh, you talking about Peloton support, Charles? Mm-hmm. The Billy Blanks of PC. Bringing back Tybo for the 2024s. Got them legs moving. I'm going to teach you how to do some taekwondo.
No to all of this. Like when Drew was talking to him about, I want you to be a part of this health and wellness thing that I want to get going. Even Michael, all I thought was, why are we doing this and not focusing on the business that Curtis already owns, the Savoy? Like why are we making Curtis do things for Drew? Curtis is a business owner, a black business owner. Why is he doing things for Drew's business?
Exactly. Exactly. And giving out free ideas too.
Exactly.
You can have a whole franchise Pelotons. And I can do the spin cycle class. Sure can. That's basically what they're trying to say. And not only that, before we get to our song picks, Nina walks in to spill tea about Carly and Jagger in the hotel room, and she likes to spread misinformation because she's messy. And then her best friend has miraculously found the ability to walk, and she no-sells it. Like, what? I cannot. And, you know, I put up an angel number for that room that Jagger and Carly was in. I don't give a fuck enough to give intel about the numbers. I don't care enough. I don't give a fuck to tell you about what the number means, the significance. Don't care. Truly don't. Give me a number when it's Trina related and I can read it on the show. But until that happens, I am off astrology duty.
Yeah, and they, I mean, since we were talking about it, they also had, they used Curtis to badmouth Nina too. Yes. Since we were talking about people badmouthing Nina all week, I'm like, not you using Curtis, who's supposed to be her friend, actually bad. Like, she literally tells Curtis before she leaves, I love you. And he's like, love you too. But then he's like, Nina was out of line.
You turncoat. Ball headed turncoat, but okay.
Just, I had so many problems with those scenes overall. Cause, like I said, I just felt like, they were having Curtis is like window dressing during that scene. Cause I just like, why do they keep doing this to Curtis? Why do they keep doing this, like having him just sit there and be the, like, I don't know. Like, I need them to give Curtis a story that's his own, like his own story, like not this sitting down and watching Drew and Michael and Nina spar. I was not entertained by it at all. It was just, I could have done without that. I need better storyline for Curtis. Like, I need better storyline for all the Black characters, period.
Across the board, wholesale. I don't like him being on prop duty. He was just window dressing on Thursday and Friday, and I didn't appreciate it. Didn't get it either. And it's been a rough go as of late. I'm hoping for improvement, but it doesn't look great, and it doesn't seem as if it's getting better anytime soon. I'm hoping that it gets better, and it really comes down to attacking this head on and being active and being vocal and doing what you got to do. Call, write to the show, advertisers, get their attention, show stats that matter, that resonate, that really get to the core of what's going on. The data doesn't lie. Let it be known what's working, what's not working, and then really compel the show to do something. We know when their backs are against a wall, they react. But when we let up, then they get really lax again. Mm-hmm. So you just got to keep the pressure up and just say, we're not going to keep accepting crumbs. And at some point, people get tired and they stop watching completely. And I don't blame them. And we do what we do out of a service to the fans that are tired. And I'm tired too. And some days I wonder, why do I keep doing this? But I remember that I'm fighting not only for people that need us every Monday. It means a lot to know that we make Mondays a bit easier for people that are having a hard time watching this show. Mm-hmm. And it's an honor for me to do this. I know it's an honor for you as well that we get to do this together every week. But I also think about Tabiana as well and how much she's going through recently about what she's not getting. And when you get those great moments, it's wonderful, but then it's sparse after that. So that's why we keep fighting for her and really for the Black cast as well, because we want that equality across the board to be balanced. And when we don't see that, it's stark. When we don't see Portia and Trina and scenes together, we see Jordan being minimized and her not having a love life. And we see Hat Daddy being reduced to recurring status. Robert Gossett is an Emmy winner, for crying out loud, and he's off contract. And we have Donnell, after the storyline, being a prop and a talk to for Drew and Michael and Nina. It's a lot. And Vernie is calling out crap as Stella. We appreciate it, but that's still prop duty for other people. So I just need this writing team to do better, to focus stories around Black characters that resonate, that make sense, and that is rooted in reality and not something that we cannot buy into. And that's what I'm seeing right now via the spoilers for this week, with Trina being a talk to for Joss and Dex and maybe not being seen again for the rest of the week. 5 times we've seen Tabiana's face in 8 weeks. Let that be a reminder. 5 times in 8 weeks. Taj, even less than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I, like you said, I appreciate everybody that tunes in on Mondays, because, you know, it's easy to be like, oh, we're not going to do this because of this, this, and this. But like, if, like you said, if we stop talking, if we stop bringing these things to light, then they're just going to be like, oh, well, nobody cares about these other characters. Because it's like, we are talking about Tabiana and Trina's character not being showcased enough. But it's also a good way to highlight the other Black characters that are not being showcased or not being given proper stories. Because even right now with like Jordan, like I feel like they're at this point where, ever since they took away her job as the police commissioner, because that's what they did. They took away her job as the police commissioner because they wanted us to believe that, oh, her becoming deputy mayor is so great. Like, isn't this wonderful? But they took her stories away when they moved her to that. Because, I mean, let's face it, when we, you know, Valora as the mayor, we weren't really seeing her too much. And we weren't even seeing the previous deputy mayor who Victor yeeted off Jason's bridge. And we weren't really seeing her. She was popping up few, far, and in between. And so now, like with Jordan, I feel like they're at this state where they don't know what to do with her, because we see her floating in, like sometimes she's Anna's right hand and, you know, they're doing sting operations together, but then that falls flat. And then and then we see her popping up at the gym with Drew, or the latest we saw her in, you know, Drew's office at Aurora Media talking about the ways that they can work together so that they can make poor Charles look good again. Like, you know, like all these different things. It's like, it's like I said, it's like they don't know what to do with her character. Like, and I see that across the board with a lot of the Black characters. It's like, they're like, what do we do with you guys? It's like, oh, let's have you sit down and talk to this person. Let's just throw you here for this person. Oh, egg sandwiches in the park to talk about babies. Like, tired. T-I-R-E-D. Tired. Okay?
I sat like at hour one and need oxygen. I need a drink. Now, stat, immediately. But before I get a drink, it's now time to select our song picks for this week that best describe Spencer and Trina. So Jasmine, after a couple of weeks, do you have any songs to share with the people?
I have two, and they're both, of course, for Trina. So the first one is Hallucinations by DVSN. And this song I felt like was perfect after thinking about like her talking about, you know, phone calls from Spencer and him walking through the door. And so the key lyrics are, having hallucinations. I'm losing sleep every night. Keep trying to cover my eyes. My eyes, yeah. Is it my imagination? I think I'm losing my mind. Still see your face all the time, all the time. Trying to rewind till we're back where we started. Yeah, that's all I want. Night after night after night, I'm still haunted. I'm haunted, baby. I'm haunted by you. You fall asleep and dream of you. You, late at night, I scream for you. You, waiting on a deja vu. But until then, I live with hallucinations. They're just hallucinations. I'll just hallucinate because you're not here. Hallucinations. Losing my concentration, hearing your voice in my head, seeing you when you aren't there. You're not there. And I can't keep living like this. Something's got to give. Give me you. If I could make it all go away, then I would. And then the second song I have is Fake Happy by Paramore. And key lyrics are, I love making you believe what you get is what you see. But I'm so fake happy. I feel so fake happy. And I bet everybody here is just as insincere. We're all so fake happy. And I know fake happy. So I've been doing a good job of making them think I'm quite all right. Better hope I don't blink. You see, it's easy when I'm stomping on a beat. But no one sees me when I crawl back underneath. If I smile with my teeth, bet you believe me. If I smile with my teeth, I think I believe me. Oh, please don't ask me how I've been. Don't make me play pretend. Oh, no. Oh, what's the use? Oh, please. I bet everybody here is fake happy, too. And if I go out tonight, dress up my fears, you think I look all right with these mascara tears? See, I'm going to drop my lipstick wider than my mouth. And if the lights are low, they'll never see me frown. If I smile with my teeth, bet you believe me. If I smile with my teeth, I think I believe me. Those are my picks for this week.
All right. I love them both. I love me some Paramore, obviously. So my song picks are three by the same artist and two from the same album and one from the second album they put out well over 25 years ago. And it's by one of my favorite bands, Garbage. And I think all of these songs resonate for Trina, especially as she is still grieving Spencer And my first song is entitled My Lover's Box. And the key lyrics are, my lover's charms are in a box beneath my bed. And piece by piece, I cherish them until the end. Send me an angel to love. I need to feel a little piece of heaven. Send me an angel to love. I'm afraid I'll never get to heaven. They burn my hand, scar my face, and blind my eyes. I steal your breath and throw away what I despise. Send me an angel to love. I need to feel a little piece of heaven. Send me an angel to love. I'm afraid I'll never get to heaven. Behind these walls and darkened halls, I've done my time. If I should die before I wake, then you know why. Send me an angel to love. I need to feel a little piece of heaven. Send me an angel to love. I'm afraid I'll never get to heaven. And the lyrics repeat. And that is my first song pick. My second song pick is a classic, essential, garbage ballad that I love. Only Happy When It Rains. And key lyrics are, I'm only happy when it rains. I'm only happy when it's complicated. And though I know you can't appreciate it, I'm only happy when it rains. You know I love it when the news is bad, while it feels so good to feel so sad. I'm only happy when it rains. Pour your misery down on me. Pour your misery down on me. I'm only happy when it rains. I feel good when things are going wrong. I only listen to the sad, sad songs. I'm only happy when it rains. I only smile in the dark. My only comfort is the night gone black. I didn't accidentally tell you that. I'm only happy when it rains. You get the message by the time I'm through. When I complain about me and you, I'm only happy when it rains. Pour your misery down. Pour your misery down on me. I'm only happy when it rains. You want to hear about my new obsession? I'm riding high upon a deep depression. I'm only happy when it rains. Pour your misery down. Can you keep me company as long as you don't care? Pour some misery down on me. I'm only happy when it rains. And the lyrics repeat itself. Love that classic song. And the final song is entitled The Trick Is to Keep Breathing, off of Version 2.0, their second album that came out way back in 1998. And key lyrics are, she's not that kind of girl who likes to tell the world about the way she feels about herself. She takes little time in making up her mind. She doesn't want to fight against the tide. Lately, I'm not the only one. I say never trust anyone. Always the one who has to drag her down. Maybe you get what you want this time around. Can't bear to face the truth, so sick he cannot move. And when it hurts, he takes it out on you. Lately, I'm not the only one. I say never trust anyone. Always the one who has to drag her down. Maybe you'll get what you want this time around. The trick is to keep breathing. She knows the human heart and how to read the stars. Now everything's about to fall apart. I won't be the only one who's going to let you down. Maybe you'll get what you want this time around. I won't be the one who's going to let you down. Maybe you'll get what you want this time around. The trick is to keep breathing, as the lyrics repeat. And those are my song picks for the week.
Those are good ones.
All righty. Thank you very much. And with that, this wraps up a deluxe edition of the Sabrina Sessions. Back after a 2-week hiatus, we're back. We had a lot to talk about. Very passionate as always, as we want the best for GH, but they're not giving their best right now. But that is why we're here, to keep calling it out every single week until we see meaningful progress. I want to thank Jasmine as always for joining me as we recap the week that was for Trina and everyone else on General Hospital.
Yeah, we had a lot to unpack, but I wish that the stuff we were talking about was more positive, good stuff. But I don't know, and I'm hoping that when we do the next show that we have some good stuff to talk about. But the spoiler with Trina doesn't make me feel good.
I'm not encouraged. I'm not hopeful, but I'm going to cover it. We're going to talk about it nonetheless and hope that she can make lemonade out of lemons. I don't know. We'll see. But this is not great I'm not going to lie to you. And some people say, you know what? I'm not going to watch Trina be a talk to. And I don't blame people for feeling that way mm-hmm. because you want Trina being presented at her best, not as a talk to, because we know her character is so much more valuable than that. She has such a great story to tell if these writers give her the material, which they did a few weeks ago. And all we ask is for that equality to be balanced on this show. And hopefully that happens. And if it doesn't happen, we keep fighting like hell until it does. Mm-hmm. And that goes for everybody on Black Hospital that are currently underserved by this new regime. Hopefully that changes soon, but we know we got a platform and we know it matters for something based on how they react on the timeline when need be. But until next week, that's this week for the Sabrina Sessions right here on WST. So we'll come back and we reconvene and hope for the best. But until next time, for myself and for Jasmine and the words of the great Trina Carisha Buffy Robinson, goodbye, room. Thank you.
Goodbye, room. Thank you.